My name is Gary Butterfield, he, him.
My name is Kay Ross, she, her.
And you're listening to Watch Out for Fireballs. It is a Games Club podcast.
And this week we are talking about Dead Space 2, which is a survival horror game developed by Visceral Games and published by EA for the Xbox 360 and PlayStation 3 in 2011.
Your mom hates this podcast.
They hate us.
They
told us. She wrote us a letter.
I've actually never met, I think, a mom who wasn't heads over heels in love with me.
Mm-hmm.
I test well with moms.
Same.
So this game, in some ways, I'm the anti-Dead Space too.
Mm-hmm. No, I was the loser wad who, like, the moms wanted their kids to play with me because I was going to be a good influence.
Yeah.
Which has never made me, I want to beat myself up.
Every girlfriend or partner's mom has really liked me, even when I didn't like them very much.
Wow. Yeah.
It was a whole thing. Mm. This episode is executive produced by Jack. Big thanks to Jack. And this is the sequel. We covered the original Dead Space way back in episode 154 in 2017, a ludicrous amount of time ago.
Yeah. Amount of time ago. So much so that you may forget what that game is about. This is a direct sequel, as direct a sequel as you can get. In that game, you play as a space engineer named Isaac Clarke. You go to a massive mining ship looking for your girlfriend, Nicole, only to find that it's been taken over by these monsters made of corpses reanimated by something called the Marker. Also, your girlfriend, bro, she's dead. She's dead as fuck.
And now there's more.
Uh-huh.
It's 3 years after that, Isaac is woken up from a coma in a space station on Saturn's moon, Titan. Those monsters are back, and Isaac has to figure out what's going on, why it wasn't, you know, put back in the bottle the first time, and try to escape.
Yeah, almost actionably the transition from Alien to Aliens.
It's got tons of Alien to Aliens DNA, both kind of in how it plays and the storyline of it. And Dead Space 1, so like this is kind of, and remains so, kind of my poster child series for something that I should like a lot more than I do.
Yeah.
Like I like this more than I like the first one.
Yep.
I didn't like the first one, and it was one of the very early, not that early, episode 154, but a relatively early example of the Watch Out for Fireballs phenomenon of like us doing a game and then people being like, oh, the sequel fixes everything you don't like about it.
Yeah.
And I'm not, that makes it sound like, that's a fine thing to say. I'm not.
Yes.
No.
But it's just like, it does sometimes feel, and nobody directly says it, but it does sometimes feel like, oh, you shouldn't have covered that one. Nothing that you said about that one's right because they fixed it. It's not worth saying the stuff about the first one because the second one, we fixed it.
And there are sequels that obviate originals.
Yes.
You know, that's like a thing. Mm-hmm. An interesting thing about playing this is that while I recognize, like I feel nothing for this game. Just planting a flag in the sand. Mm-hmm. I had some fun with it. The series doesn't do it for me. And
yeah. I'm
trying to figure out why, when it does do things better, has been a really interesting critical challenge because it's a lot of ineffables. Mm-hmm. For something that is like this inspired by Resident Evil 4, I think this is so much worse than everything that has any Resident Evil 4 DNA directly.
Mm-hmm.
And it's hard for me to figure out exactly why. And kind of part of my quest is to figure that out, I guess, through this. Part of it is just not feeling a whole lot from it. Part of it is just that aliens, the alien move.
Mm-hmm.
And there's a lot of like little things that kind of cover the entire game that aren't specific. Mm-hmm. Like, they'd be hard to point out every time, but like, here's a thing, and this is just my brain. These monsters don't look like anything to me.
Mm-hmm.
I think I said that during the last one as well, but they don't look like anything.
It's really hard to tell the difference between some of them until one of them just kind of like does an attack out of the darkness. Well, first off, you can't see them half the time.
Yeah.
You know, and just like they look like nothing to me. Like individually, if you get like a close up on them, you can see like, okay, yeah, that's roughly what the shape of this is. There is a fleshy Michael Bay Transformer.
I was going to just say, make the Transformers comparison. Yeah. They look almost exactly like the modern Transformers to me. Mm-hmm. Like the idea of a conglomeration of dead body parts, like that's the Rotten. Mm-hmm. That's neato. Like I'm way into that. It doesn't look like the thing it is to me though. So there's just like this really weird anonymous wash to this whole thing that I have a very hard time grasping onto.
Yeah.
It's weird.
I was more positive on the original Dead Space than you were back when we covered the first one, while still, you know, noticing the places where it was
the turret section.
Pretty threadbare, but like a lot of the zero G stuff. And I was kind of among those voices saying like, yeah, no, this especially sucks coming to it in light of knowing that they figured out how to not touch this stove, right? Like they figured out this stuff sucks. Even they kind of knew it. And when they addressed, you know, should we do this again in Dead Space 2? They didn't. And I was kind of saying like, yeah, eventually we're going to do Dead Space 2. I came back to this, I really, really liked Dead Space 2 back in the day. I was like, yeah, okay. They fixed it. Like this is really good. You know, played it when it came out. I've revisited it since, you know, like in the intervening time too. But like this time, you know, there could be any number of other factors, but like I was pretty frustrated playing this. And I think that I can describe why this does not have the Resident Evil 4 chops, even though it is very clearly trying to ape that. Mm-hmm. You know, like if you're going to steal from the best, there's nothing wrong with that. There are parts of just putting a game together and assembling an encounter that they just didn't see. Like they Resident Evil 4 did it, and they did not recognize it and decided not to emulate it.
Yeah. A lot of it comes down to encounter design. A lot of it comes down to enemy design. A lot of it's pace as well. Like all things that are going to be difficult to talk about in individual encounters, even though there are encounters where it stands out, then more go over everything. So I guess I'm letting everyone know to like buckle up, because there's a lot of things I want to say that are general ones in this first part that are just going to be a thing during the second part when we're largely recounting the plot.
Yeah.
You know, and that's kind of Watch Out for Fireballs standard protocol, but I really felt it this time because instead of thinking back like the first one and being like, here's what I don't like, it never lets you breathe. These spaces are super anonymous. There's a horrible turret section. This time I looked back and said, some of these spaces are kind of cool. There are a couple of moments to breathe. Every encounter just feels like things kind of rushing me and me setting them into slow motion.
Yeah.
And doing the same thing for each one. And I am being led along from like kind of set piece encounter to uncontrolled animation flailing.
by
my nose the entire time, point to point, in a way that is so 2011 and so not how video games feel now, or like what I really want from games, and notably that like the games that I think do this formula better don't do.
Yeah.
They're more system focused. They're a little bit less, they have less of a grip on you. This game really, really grips you.
Yeah.
You know, like it wants to take your nose and lead you around to what it wants you to look at and feel in a way that feels like a kind of a breathless action movie that is not necessarily my cup of tea.
That is not just a result of the guideline either.
No.
Like even if you are not relying on that, and we can talk about like, that guideline. We'll get into it.
We'll get all like, of this.
This is a value that is not like just expressed in the mechanics that obviously seem like they would. They would point to that.
There are ineffables in it. It's one of these things too, where I've been pregnant with thoughts about this for a long time because I didn't move across country, so I'm pretty ahead on work. So I've had this kind of sitting in the pocket for a while, just like bursting. Like I just have tons of little baby spider corpse eggs that just need to burst out of thoughts about Dead Space 2.
Yeah.
So it's faster. It's a third-person shooter. Enemies are generally destroyed by aiming at weak points, oftentimes severing their limbs. Not always. That was the big subversion in Dead Space. Not headshots. It's cutting off arms.
Yes.
And stuff.
You have lots of weapons that will give you several different ways to do this. Not very many new ones in this game. There's like a javelin gun, which is pretty fun, but that's about it in terms of new stuff. Your suit gives you some abilities that are necessary for this combat and for the way that the encounters are put together. You have something called stasis. This will slow an object down in time. So this is used for puzzles, like to get through a fan that is spinning. You slow the blades down to walk through. Or if Beavis really, really needs to settle down and you have enough settle down Beavis juice, you can make that happen.
Pour the juice down Beavis.
Yeah.
And in the first game, it was much more for puzzles. Mm-hmm. Here it is more necessary in combat, I felt.
Yeah.
There were a lot more settle down Beavises and a lot more enemies where I felt like the only way to deal with them was to make them drink settle down juice. Mm-hmm. You also have a telekinetic thing. You pick up and throw objects. This is unlimited. Mm-hmm. So you can use this to conserve ammo. You can throw objects and body parts at enemies. You can hurl enemies once they're dead. Mm-hmm. Things like that.
It is very funny how the telekinesis like detects whether or not the thing has a soul.
Yes.
Because if you can't pick up a body, like a dead body, that thing's going to get up and come at you.
Yeah.
Like, there's still a soul in there.
Yeah, exactly. It actively resists.
Yeah. This is also good for like grabbing drops. If an enemy, sometimes an enemy will drop something the first time you kill them. Other times you have to go and do a stomp to get them.
To get all the turtle treasures out of them.
Yeah. Pray that the body doesn't fade away. Otherwise you're going to be completely starved of resources.
Lose out of the resource
curve. Yeah. But you can yank items to collect them more easily in the middle of, in the middle of combat as well.
And the telekinetics in this is fun. I'm not made of stone. This is always a fun mechanic.
Oh yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. These are upgraded with something called power nodes. You can find these kind of rarely. And you can also stock up on items at shops. There are little kiosks that sell engineering supplies, as there is. That's basically the basics. There are a couple of quality of life things they change for the sequel that aren't going to make a big difference unless you played the first one.
And played the first one like immediately before this one, obviously. Yeah.
It feels, those little quality of life things do make a difference, though. Like, want to give it flowers when it has it. We're talking a little bit about encounter design and game feel. Everything kind of rushes you at this. There are a couple enemies that ambush. Mm-hmm. Like there's a specific enemy that ambushes. But I found that one of the ways the levels encounters designed in this game is that, in contrasting with Resident Evil 4, in Dead Space 2, when I go into a space, I go into a room, and taking the shape of that room is not that useful because things can come out of walls and shit, which makes the encounter design in every room be things can come at me from any side.
Yes.
And I can understand somebody writing that out on a whiteboard and be like, this is exciting. Like the player is always on edge.
Yeah.
But it's one of these things where it's like, I just have to insist that like I exist. Mm-hmm. Like, no, I want this to be slow and be able to turtle up.
Yeah.
Like if I look at a room, one of the things I'm doing is trying to find a defensible point.
Yeah.
I don't want things to come out of the vents anywhere. I don't want the room to be porous for encounter design. Everything's going to come at me and then come at me from multiple angles. That's good once. It's not good every single time.
Right.
And there's so many encounters in this game that are that.
Pretty much every encounter is you walk into a very dark room that's like a lab where there are some tables or whatever. And then there are vents that stuff can jump out of. And they're going to jump out of it. It's going to be very dark. You're not going to see what is attacking you. Enemies with projectiles will just straight up attack out of the darkness. Everything staggers you.
Yeah.
If you want to picture the experience of playing Dead Space 2.
Imagine a human boot wiggling.
Well, no, just imagine.
Stumbling.
No, just imagine George C. Scott screaming, oh, my groin.
There's like, a lot of, oh, my groin.
I go into the stagger animation because like a little thing, paper cut me. And my aiming is all messed up and it's coming from everywhere.
Yes. It's a thing where in the first game, this had was could be twisted into being a plus side because the idea was you're Gordon Freeman. Mm-hmm. Like, you're just a guy. Yeah. You know, if you're fighting a Transformers corpse, it's going to fuck you up and scare you and shake you up. You know, mm-hmm. as the series goes on and your character gets more, you know, kind of capable, that ends up feeling a little worse through yeah. it. It's also, again, a game design thing I really associate specifically with this era, mm-hmm. Like the nonstop watching an animation of your character doing something.
Yeah.
Like a little stumble animation of that being like a plus. Like, people loved that.
Oh, yeah.
It was, and I don't remember loving it, and I don't remember, I can't put myself in the mindset that loves it.
Yeah.
It's just irritating to me. Like, a stagger animation can be really important, but it mm-hmm. has to be like tactical. I have to control it. It's a penalty I pay for making a mistake. It can't mm-hmm. just be a little bit of flourish to try to make this a little bit more cinematic or action movie feeling.
Yes.
You know, and that's how this feels.
It can't be that everything causes that.
Yes.
You know, it can't be that. There's no like useful tactic in this game, right? Like,
yeah.
You know, I think about, again, Resident Evil 4 combat. You know, you don't want to hold everything against perfection, but this is, you know, this is post that, and everything that. Is trying
to. This also was them saying, we're going to do that.
Yeah, this is them saying they're going to do that. So I feel like it's fair game to at least bring the comparison in. Those spaces are designed with the enemies in mind, and they're designed for you to, the combat is all about you, situational awareness, right? I think that Resident Evil 4 without situational awareness and, you know, tactics, you know, like deciding when to move, when to stick, when to turtle up, when to, you know, when to go for resources, all of those are individual decisions you kind of don't realize that you're making.
Yeah.
In Dead Space 2, at any given time, if you stand still or if you move, it kind of doesn't make a difference, because if you stand still, you're going to get a bunch of shit attacking you out of the dark and staggering you. And if you move, you're going to walk into the attacks of something that is going to attack out of the dark and stagger you. There's no like inventory of enemies. Shit just kind of comes out of the vents until it decides the encounter is over.
And yeah. It's a very similar problem to the problem I had with the first one, which I described the first time I described something as an insecure dungeon master. Mm-hmm. Like a game that will not stop trying to thrill you because it's worried it will lose your attention.
Yeah.
And this game is a little bit better than that because there are occasionally spaces to explore. Mm-hmm. Like, that's worth, you know, giving it its flowers.
Yes.
And some of those are cool. But it doesn't, the encounter never has, it never feels mixed. Mm-hmm. Part of that, you know, you talked about the spaces being designed for the enemies. In this game, I think the spaces are designed for the enemies. The enemies just suck because mm-hmm. they all just rush at you fast.
Yeah.
One of the things, there's a difference to me in how it feels between a game generally having kind of a slower pace, like Resident Evil 4, versus a game having a very fast pace that I'm able to slow down from time to time when I need to. Mm-hmm. Like, this has a gaming value of being a Twitch action game.
Yeah.
This plays a lot more like a fast shooter kind of thing. And if you, the idea of constantly being surrounded by things, like being, you know, a protagonist on Vampire Survivors, every room you go into mm-hmm. is appealing. Like, yeah, this does something like that. Mm-hmm. It makes me tired. I'm much more interested in those strategic decisions, even when I don't know that I'm making them, even when I'm making them quickly.
Yeah.
I think it's more interesting than just aiming at the thing and shooting it and being really overwhelmed.
Yeah.
I get like a fatigue of being thrilled, where I'm no longer thrilled. I'm just kind of like angry and bored and irritated.
I also
like a baby listening to jazz. Babies hate jazz. They hate Boogie Woogie.
I feel like the game is working against itself, right? I feel like it is trying to pull itself in two different directions, being about, you know, the you know, shooting and aiming and trying to conserve your resources, even in this more action configured kind of version of Dead Space, combined with the anything can happen from any direction for any reason. And yeah, and it will just stop you. It'll take you out of the game. It will get you. It'll get you locked. Gary, somebody really should have gone in and said, "Not everything needs a grab attack." That also feels like a sweaty DM thing. Like, all right, we have this kind of camera style where we're gonna get like stuff's gonna get right up in your face, and the camera's gonna get right up in its face. Everything has a grab attack. It gives you a button mash prompt to maybe not get out of it. There's no feedback.
It gives you something to do while you're being mashed. It lets you look at your phone while you're in line.
It's you might as well be clapping for Tinkerbell.
Yeah.
As it goes, and no sense of if you are succeeding in warding off the attack by doing the button mashing, not that I could discern in my 3 or 4 playthroughs of this.
Yeah.
It's just occasionally you're going to walk along, you're going to be caught in a 15-second animation. You might get out of it, but it'll just leave you in a position where the next thing that grazes you causes you to fall apart like a man made of stacked up firewood.
Yeah, you get the critical existence failure, as they call it on TV tropes. Yeah, I also do not like that. It is a huge bummer. It works for some people in order to make a visceral kind of like making people feel like they're there.
Yeah.
And that's what reviews said at the time. That's what retrospectives say. Yeah. I just don't have that gamer DNA.
It's neat once or it's neat twice. Same thing with like special death animations. Something that would happen is I would get killed by something, and it would do like this incredibly ornate, like, okay, everything stop, the lights dim, the orchestra starts tuning up.
Yeah.
We're going to go through this incredibly baroque kind of like tableau vivant of Isaac being disassembled by this thing. Mm-hmm. And I'm not made of stone. That's a fatality. I like seeing that. The problem is, as I do that encounter over and over again, I don't need to see it every single fucking time.
What's funny about it too is that, I mean, this is all over the place, but that's okay, is that whatever that spiritual successor to Dead Space that came out that nobody liked,
Callisto Protocol,
that was the criticism people had of Callisto Protocol.
Yeah.
One of them. And I'm like, what's happening? That's happening here too.
Yeah.
I read reviews of Callisto Protocol from people who love Dead Space 2 who are like, mm-hmm. yeah, it sucks because you just had to watch the same death cutscenes over and over. And I'm like,
yeah.
I am doing the exact same thing. I am a believer in degrees of sensitivity.
Yeah.
It's possible this does it less. Mm-hmm. But to me, the degree that this does it is still way too much.
Yeah, go back and play the OG. This also happens a lot in the Dead Space remake as well.
Yeah. I don't like it. It doesn't feel good. It doesn't contribute anything while also taking me out of it.
It puts a schmear, just like a fine kind of varnish of on even just the way that it feels. And if you're playing a super fast, action game that concerns itself with the things that this is trying to concern itself with, again, it feels like it is at odds with itself.
Yeah.
Like this gets in the way of this feeling like a good action game to me.
Yeah, 100%. It butts up against what it should feel like to fail or die in a game.
Yeah.
You want that to feel like you made a mistake. You want to maybe be a little scared by that. What you don't want is a dread that comes from having to watch a thing again.
Yeah.
Like you don't want the dread of tedium to ever pop up in that conversation.
Mm-hmm.
We talked about the level design a little bit interacts with the encounter design. There's a big innovation that Dead Space 1 had. This continues as the guideline, which Isaac can kind of like have a little palm flashlight that makes the ground show him where to go.
This goes along with the entire interface being diegetic. Like everything is made of solid light, to interact with. A cool decision that they lean into even more in this. That is a distinct thing about this series that is good.
Yeah. It's also a thing too that there are some improvements here. In the first one, people, the guideline was very controversial. And one of the things people didn't like about the first game was they said it was very linear. This game has slightly more diverticula.
Mm-hmm.
You can sometimes go off in little side rooms and get stuff. I still felt like this was pretty linear, largely because the arenas and the places where I was doing things were very linear, but it's a little bit less like Isaac gets a list of repairs to do and you have to go do them while following a line, which the first one was.
Yes.
Like you can go off in somebody's apartment, mm-hmm. From time to time and looking through their stuff. Yeah. There's a little bit of that.
It's funny because like the guideline does introduce this kind of heuristic, which is you walk into a new space, you press the button to see, okay, this is where it wants me to go. I need to go everywhere but this in order to get collectibles.
Need those power nodes.
I need those power nodes. You want those power nodes. You want your weapons to do more damage because this can, you know, I don't want to call this a hard game. This is a game that will make you do a bunch of stuff over a lot, and upgrading your stuff makes it not work. You know, makes that it not happen as much. Yeah.
Yeah, I got no problem with a guideline as an opt-in experience. I think it's cool and good. It's fine.
I wish that the levels were designed in such a way that the guideline was not necessary. You know, and like this game is trying to do some stuff. This happened a little bit in the first game, but it is leaning on it a little bit more here, where like you go through a space and then you're meant to go back through it in a different kind of condition. Like, oh, shit's gotten worse, and you get to see that. There is no, there is still kind of no sense of place for a lot of this, for as neat as some of the environments are. You know, like this is not a, you know, not everything needs to be a puzzle box space like a Spencer Mansion, you know, kind of deal. But it is still a bunch of like combat arenas linked by hallways.
I'm going to throw a flag in the sand here and say that this is a problem with science fiction games after a certain point. Mm-hmm. Like, we're not expecting anyone to agree with me. This is just, you know, Gary opinion, but like not everything has to be a Spencer Mansion. A mansion is a grokkable space automatically. Mm-hmm. A space station, even if it does have residential zones, is not automatically a grokkable space. Mm-hmm. There are degrees of that. Yeah. You know, you kind of at like the top of that, you have, say, like a Prey, mm-hmm. where that is a space station where every room has a purpose. It's laid out correctly. This game is taking a step towards that from the first one, which was just tech hallways.
Yeah.
I really did not like the environments in the first one at all. Mm-hmm. This one is a little bit better. There's a mall. Yeah. There's a church. There's an apartment complex.
You go to cool spaces, and there are some set pieces. Like, there are some, you know, like moments in this where it's like, oh yeah, this is like super memorable. Like
In between those moments, mm-hmm. we're still just doing tech hallways.
Yeah.
There's something about the fidelity, I want to say, of specifically like Western sci-fi games of a certain like level of fidelity that has an anonymizing effect. Mm-hmm. Not always, but if something's going to be anonymous, like if this were a mansion, if this were a place with rooms and I could see like, oh, there's a couch here, this is where somebody would sit and read, it would make a bigger difference than how many hallways and just kind of labs. Mm-hmm. There are in this.
Yeah.
Like a room full of waist-high tables.
Mm-hmm. There's also inconsistency in this. At a certain point, like you leave all the cool places and it's back to, guess what? This game ends in a mining facility again.
They love mining. And I understand that's what Isaac, it's what he used to do, man. Give it up.
Yeah.
Like you're no longer a miner. Like, I don't know what you are at this point, but I wouldn't call you or you're not an engineer anymore. Like you do other stuff now.
Yeah.
You know, and all of these complaints, I want to head off the thing. We know that this is fixed in Dead Space 3. We know that's the best game in the series. Everyone loves it. It's got no problems. And all this stuff is fixed in Dead Space 3.
Yeah.
And we will play it.
We will play it. We will find a way to do it co-op. Everybody needs to know about the what Johnny Second Guy brings to the story.
Johnny Second Guy. I'm going to go ahead and buy a bunch of EA bucks. Mm-hmm. And I'm going to buy the downloadable armors and shit. I'm joking about that. It's an infamously bad game.
Yeah.
So I didn't fuck around with the multiplayer in this. I didn't look at it really.
It's not either. One of those games where when you open it up, like just your first impression upon playing this game this day is like, could not connect to EA servers.
Yeah. Thank God. Yeah. Love EA. Audio design, this is pretty good. You had to locate enemies in the dark. They are constantly making wet growling noises. Yeah. I wish there was a wider variety of those noises. The baby mm-hmm. ones make different noises.
Yeah.
But I did do, you know, again, God, I keep bringing up Resident Evil 4. Speaking to me in a language I don't understand menacingly mm-hmm. is so much cooler than just wet corpse noises.
Yeah.
It's so much more scary and relatable. I got fatigued of this. The audio design is good in terms of its effectiveness, in terms of like playing this with headphones, knowing where things are. I cease to be scared by the noises. Mm-hmm. There's only so much wet flesh rubbing against each other, you know, that you can tolerate.
Yeah.
And be scared by.
Also, some of it like is just anti-scary to me. Some of the more frustrating encounters in this game have to do with these kind of like cyst environmental
things,
which is just, it's just a little pimple on the wall that will knock you over because it spits out an explodey thing.
Those are the biggest argument in this game towards intelligent design. Because like the idea of this as being an organic thing that would just grow randomly in those fucking gotcha spots is ludicrous. Like I've never felt a level designer harder derogatory than going through those sections.
Yeah.
I was like, fucking got me. Fucking got me. I got to watch the knockdown animation again. Fucking got me.
Yep. You got me. I got to watch that. You know, like you sure did hide that behind some geometry.
Good show. Yeah. Again. Yeah. Good show. The joke keeps getting better, man. Keep working on it.
Those things make a noise that sounds almost exactly like in Christmas Vacation, the dog yakking up a bone. It sounds like snots just going.
It does sound a lot like snots. Get the mod in place that replaces them with snots.
Yeah. The music is good. I like the kind of like sci-fi space opera, like bloody horns in this quite a bit.
Yeah. Yeah, it works just fine. Like it does the job for me, just fine.
Yeah.
The story of this is super dumb. You have to be into the sci-fi tropes this is doing.
Also the general horror mind realm tropes that this is doing.
Yeah, Dead Space has always been kind of a melange of stuff. You know, the big twist at the end about your girlfriend being dead and being a super corpse, being a ghost corpse, continues in this. You know, we have that going on, along with the terror of like elder collectivism going on. They gave Isaac a voice. He is more of a character in this. This is better than him being weirdly silent. I don't like Isaac that much. He's from that, again, 2011, this era of protagonist where like it's primarily a guy who's still going, what the hell's going on? I need some answers. There's a lot of what the hell's going on? I need some answers. Going on. If you like a guy yelling that, Isaac does it a lot. Some of the side characters are more interesting than Isaac himself. And it wouldn't have made sense for him not to speak. So I get that.
You can remember side characters in this game. Name anybody in Dead Space 1 who is not Isaac or Nicole, right?
Yeah, don't know.
Yeah. What's funny is, and I don't know how they managed to do this, you know, Dead Space 1, the entire game is just, okay, we need to fix the tram. Well, guess what? There's bad news about the tram. You need to go into the crawl space.
Breaker room.
Yeah, the breaker room. Ah, shit, the breaker room. You know, there's a problem.
It's
attic.
Flooded. I got bad news about the water pipe.
It's just that, like, there's something like just like about just getting these work orders from people to get around it that is like really frustrating. That was made more frustrating and surreal by the silent protagonist. They did manage to give Isaac a personality and a voice, and still have the majority of what you're doing in this be like, ah, shit, the tracks are broken. We need to fix the tracks. And they didn't do the, like, the, oh, gosh, every time. Like, they weren't snarky about it.
They didn't underline it.
Yeah, they didn't underline it in a way that would have made it, like, even more super infuriating.
Yeah.
Which is, like, a weirdly applaudable task.
Because writers feel like if you have characters acknowledge the flaws in your writing, it makes them not flaws. It's a huge problem in writing, and it's something I've noticed since I was a kid. Like, it's like, oh, that still sucks.
That doesn't fix
just
it.
Just because you underline it doesn't mean it doesn't suck. Yeah.
See the recent Real Lich Hours, right?
Yeah, we talked about that.
Yeah.
So in between Dead Space 1 and 2, EA Redwood Shores changed their name to Visceral Games. They're no longer the Redwood Shores, which sounds very peaceful. They're now quite visceral.
Yeah. They made Dead Space. A whole studio history of making Tiger Woods and My Sims games. They make Dead Space and suddenly we're visceral.
No, we like blood now.
They started making this right after Dead Space's release. It reviewed positively. It was a really big deal for EA. Kind of been a big year for EA in general. Like 2008 was, you know, Dead Space, Mirror's Edge, Dragon Age Origins was right around that time. It was just kind of part of this big salvo where people were like, EA's back, baby. But the studio had also agreed to work on the Dante's Inferno game, the God of War-like that came out in 2010, which I desperately want to bring to Abject Suffering, but you can't really play it now.
Yeah, and I heard the sequel fixes all the problems.
It does, Dante's Purgatorio was actually in pre-production, and they did cancel it.
And Dante's Paradiso, which is just a cozy game. Like, you're just hanging out with Socrates and shit. I guess that's Purgatorio. You're just hanging out with Christ, I guess.
Never read it.
The Big Man, yeah, not that interested.
But too much space between the sequels. I fell off.
I hate how modern TV works now. Yeah. It's like you just kind of wait years and years before it fucking ends on a cliffhanger. Like, who's this guy? Who's Lucifer? The Morning Star. That sounds good. Oh, he's not. And then you have to wait for Purgatorio.
Surf Mephistopheles.
Yeah. So they split their efforts between those games, as you do. The big differences in this game were a result of the feedback the original received, and it's pretty straightforward to see kind of what their aims were for this. The first one was they were making a game and then they played Resident Evil 4 and said, holy shit, that's canonical. The developers say, no, we were doing a thing and then we saw Resident Evil 4 and it was super good.
Yeah.
So we decided to do this instead. This one was like, oh, we put out their game and some people said they wanted different things about it, so we did it.
Yeah.
Like, it's very direct in a way that is fine. Mm-hmm. But there's not really a story there. It's like, we don't hear about artistic intent. We hear about a guy saying like, oh, people want this, so we tried to do it.
Yeah. Yeah. We wanted to be different, but the same.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Pretty much that.
It's very well documented. And it's a lot of like just guys being like, yeah, we did this because we thought it'd be cool.
Mm-hmm. It's all on the page.
Yeah.
Yep. Yeah. Partway through development, they suffered a setback. Activision came in and swept up a bunch of the developers to make a Call of Duty support studio, which is not glamorous.
The tale is old as time. Like, you just get catamaried into the Call of Duty support mines.
But they came over like, we're going to call you Sledgehammer Games, but you are just going to be doing side stuff for Treyarch.
Yeah. The staff drain is sometimes kind of blamed for the inconsistency of level and scenario design across the game. Even people who really like this do say there are like levels that stand out and there are parts that people don't like.
Yeah.
This game is unbelievably popular. Mm-hmm. In terms of things like I'm kind of meh on, this is one of the most loved things. Like, if you go on YouTube, like, look at criticism, which I'll do like a lot of the time because written criticism doesn't exist as much anymore. Mm-hmm. I want to see contemporary attitudes. There's a lot of like, this is the perfect sequel. This did everything right. This game is very well loved.
Yeah.
As a thing. Even the people who really love it still think that there are bad parts. They're remembering the parts that really stand out.
Yes. Yeah. And I get it. I get why that's the response people have to it. I had it for a long time. I think it just my values in games have changed.
It's been a long time. I moved on. It's like, game's almost like 20 years, 15 years old now.
Yeah.
We mentioned this. They had the ad agency they worked with had this whole series commercial called Your Mom Hates Dead Space 2, where they got real moms to come on and look at violent cutscenes and then clipped all of their reactions of where they said they did not like the cutscenes. And this was for you to look at this and be like, shit.
Like, I need to play this because my mom hates it.
My mom's going to fucking hate this.
I'm 19 years old. I make my decisions based on what my mom does and doesn't like. I'm 19.
What's wild is that, like, it seems like this is the kind of shit that we saw aimed at like 13-year-olds in the 90s.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
And this game doesn't feel like it's aimed at 13-year-olds.
No.
Like, and by 19, I was pretty well on my way towards not being motivated by my mom not liking something.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I was pretty much okay with my mom having her own taste.
Yeah, yeah.
At that point, it's like, oh yeah, no, my mom's not going to be into this.
Your mom will try.
That's weird.
Your mom will try and stop you, but legally she can't because you're an adult and you can die in war.
Get emancipated with Dead Space 2. It feels really immature for the game they tried to make. Like, this game is dumb as bricks in terms of the story, but it is trying to go for some ideas that are vaguely heady.
Talking about grief and guilt.
Yeah. A little grief and guilt. And there is a core of, I want to say a romantic core. One of the characters in the romantic core is not a character. So, but there's a devotion, a romantic devotion in this that you have to have a certain kind of maturity to understand, to buy into.
Yeah.
That is not the same as being into like, man, my mom would fucking hate if she saw me playing this.
Oh man, this guy's head opened up and there was a monster that came out of it.
Yeah, and this mom didn't like it. I remember the first time I saw that advertising thing was I got called out a lot for sexism, which I thought was interesting because it's like, it sucks, but I don't know that it's sexist. Like, it just, it sucks. It's really shitty, But like, yeah, no, I guess like as a demographic, moms are probably not as into gore. That's fine. It doesn't say make a qualitative statement either way.
Yeah.
It's just who gives a shit.
Yeah, like, women in your life always trying to stop you from doing the things you want, guys. I don't know. I'm just making up a cartoon.
That would be the argument of it for it. But I just remember seeing that and being like, shit, you know, that does suck. And then seeing the ad and just being like, I didn't feel like this was sexist. It's just fucking stupid.
It's stupid. Like, it's really immature.
Yeah. Really immature and like pandery to somebody to a person I'm hard to imagine. It's hard for me to embody the person to pander to.
You know, weirdly, if there is a victim of this, it is the person that they're trying to appeal to because they're talking down to them quite a bit.
Quite a bit. Yeah. I'm too old for this to even understand. I cannot access the part of my brain that would have been into that ad campaign.
Yeah.
And like, I shouldn't like any ad campaigns. Liking an ad campaign is one of the worst things you can do. Yeah. But this one is very embarrassing. It's really up there.
Even at the time, I was just like, oh, that's really stupid. And then moved on.
Needs to be mentioned along with that John Romero is going to make you his bitch.
Yes.
Stuff like it's also embarrassing. Mm-hmm. Reviewed really well. Shipped a lot of units, 2 million units its first week, but it's considered a failure. Mm-hmm. There is no way for success to happen from EA. Nope. They have set up a paradigm where they cannot have a game that's a success because of what they consider to be success. They have gerrymandered themselves out of it.
Yeah. See also Capcom, see fucking everything, see Marathon. Yeah.
Yep. It's all under expectations because their expectations are crazy.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. As a thing. Like, it is unclear with marketing and stuff. I was reading a thing about this. It's unclear if this made a profit.
Yeah.
That's fucking crazy.
Mm-hmm.
With all of the everything that went into this. Those numbers aren't released on purpose. And people who have looked into it do not know.
Yeah, this was around the time that the NDP stopped publishing like hard sales data. Yeah.
Yeah. There is a bunch of pre-order DLC, including some that is kind of pay to win. Mm-hmm. What's interesting is if you have the PC version of this, you start with that stuff.
Just all of that shit is there for free.
So again, this like, fucking, this is another, like things that, ways to date your game instantly and just make sure it's not future-proofed is that. And then we talked about, disguised loading screens.
Mm-hmm.
And this game does both of them. You spend a lot of time crawling through vents.
Yep.
In this, and it's like, again, I understand at the time, oh, this is so much cooler than a loading screen. Loading screens will get faster. This won't.
Mm-hmm.
You know, we have to do this to monetize it. In the future, when you give up on this, it's just going to spoil your game.
Yeah.
You're just going to have the very first thing somebody sees in a store is an object that's basically a cheat code. Mm-hmm. And if they want to not have that cluttering up their inventory, they have to meticulously move them out of the store, buy them for free, and then move them into storage and place them at the bottom.
Yeah.
So they're not like an attention tax and getting in the way for the whole rest of the game.
Yeah. They're going to get in there, clutter up, and actually hide the new shit that they are buying that is along the curve of the game as it was designed. Yeah.
It shows this is just, you know, imagine a podcaster complaining about EA, but this is just EA's lack of dedication towards art.
Yeah.
Like, we do not care about the curve. We do not care about what the developers are trying to do in terms of creating an experience. Mm-hmm. We might get like a dollar if somebody buys a cooler skin for their suit. We really would like that dollar. Not to like James Stephanie Sterling it, but it is infuriating and pathetic.
It is so funny because, like, you know, it's around the time where we're starting to see a lot of like effusive nostalgia for the Xbox 360 era, you know?
Yeah.
Like, I'm seeing that stuff pop up. And it's like, okay, this is like the first, you know, like a little bit with the PS2, because like I bought like a PS2 and an Xbox with my own money from like jobs and shit. But like, definitely for me, like, I remember this shit sucked at the time too.
Nobody liked it. Yeah.
And like, this is like so many like original sins for like the shit that people complain about now.
And people, you can ignore some of it now, you know, which is better than having it like blasted at you.
Uh-huh.
You know, it's interesting. You know, we're doing Halo Wars in a couple weeks as well.
Yeah.
And like, again, like a just, you know, premise I'm kind of working on, I might not get the Xbox at all.
Yeah.
That generation just might not have worked on me. Like, I like Halo Wars just fine. It is a perfectly cromulent RTS. Yeah. And it's
made by a good team. Yeah.
Made by a good team. Impressive that it can be done with a controller. Mm-hmm. It's just, there's something about that console generation that like streamlines things way more than I want them to be streamlined. And we see it in this game in terms of being led by the nose from encounter to encounter. It happens in Halo Wars in the way that's trying to be cinematic and have you hit the beats of an action movie, mm-hmm. as opposed to sitting you down in a playground at any point, asking you to make decisions. Like, there is a prescriptive series of things you want to do for every mission.
Yeah.
It's very different as a philosophy, and it's a thing that was people loved. 2011, people went nuts for this shit.
It's so frustrating that like the glorious PC Master Race thing, like, you know, became like the counter argument to all of this, because like, A, that's dumb, but also like that flattens things and gets rid of the actual, you know, I think elides a lot of the actual problems. Like you can see the Xbox 360 and people designing for this. It's like an extinction event in the fossil record.
Yeah.
Almost. Like if you go back, you can just kind of see like a cross section, like a stripe. Yeah. Like, yeah. Oh, this is like, this is the point when you look at somebody's bones and you see the white line, like, oh yeah, this is when you were exposed to a whole bunch of lead. It's a part of you now.
Exactly. Yeah. Yeah. Well, and the other thing about the PC Master Race thing that's so frustrating is that, like, worst possible term.
Yeah.
For a thing that really means that, there has to be a name for the fact that Invisible War was designed stupidly because of consoles. Yeah. Mm-hmm. You just need to come up with a better term and a less condescending way of saying it.
Yeah.
That is a true thing. Mm-hmm. Like, there's no denying that. Like, that is a true thing.
Yeah.
We can't pretend it's not true. Mm-hmm. But don't call it that and say shit like that. That mm-hmm. sucks.
Yeah.
There's also a story DLC called Severed. It's not available on PC, so that's cool. And there's a prequel to this, the iPhone game.
Oh, yeah.
I looked into that a little bit. That's where our Jittery McGee, our little side guy, comes from the iPhone game.
Oh, Strauss does? That's funny.
Strauss. Yeah, he's the main character of this, the in Battled or whatever the thing's called.
So this is another thing, too, like that I associate with this time. Shit that shows up in sequels that you're expected to know because you engaged with the novels.
With webisodes and with the novels and shit?
Yeah.
Yeah. Silly.
We live in hell.
Yeah,
like, I understand that there are degrees of hell, but this is hell flavored.
This was a certain kind of hell too. Like in the we always lived in hell.
Yeah,
you know, just different hells. It just the hell changes every time.
Yeah,
Dead Space 3 came out 2 years later, fixed all of the problems.
Mm-hmm.
Again, just kidding. This is a co-op third person shooter. It's not mm-hmm. as much like a horror game. It is largely forgotten. There are some interesting things that are done in that. I watched a video essay on it because I was just looking into the series.
Yeah.
The coolest thing is the secondary character does not have hallucinations.
Mm-hmm.
So there are parts where you are playing co-op and you see different things.
That's really cool.
That's super cool. It is really asymmetric in a way that disfavors a second player.
Mm-hmm.
Like if you're playing as Isaac, like you get to see a bunch of weird hallucinatory shit and the other person just doesn't.
That is a very cool different shooter.
Yeah, they're in a different shooter. That's a super cool idea, but you could also like, who would want to play as that second character who doesn't get to see the phantasmagoric like monster birthday cakes and shit?
Yeah.
Interesting idea though. But apparently that is when EA took the pay money to win lever and just like absolutely cranked it to the top.
Yeah. Yeah.
Like it got tons and tons of pay to win microtransaction mm-hmm. bullshit.
Yeah. I don't remember anybody saying a single positive word about Dead Space 3 if they spoke about it at all back at the time.
I'm sure it would actually be fun with another person because the video games are fun with another person.
Yeah.
Fear 3 was fun with another person, but that doesn't mean it's a good game.
Yes. And Dead Space lay dormant for a long time after Dead Space 3 kind of failed. Visceral shuttered with a whole bunch of unfinished products, mm-hmm. projects. But two things have happened since we discussed the original Dead Space back in 2017. We already talked about the Callisto Protocol. Dead Space's the series creator, Glenn Schofield, mm-hmm. founded his own studio, Striking Distance, put out the Callisto Protocol, did not get very good reviews, launched very buggily in a way that harmed the sales. They're no longer a going concern, I believe.
Yeah. So, you know, bummer. You know, maybe guy wanted, you know, had a vision for mm-hmm. doing Dead Space again and couldn't. We also got Dead Space Remake in 2023. Mm-hmm. This was developed by Motive Studio, and this reviewed really well and sold well, but was considered a failure.
Yep.
So the sequels are canceled, because that's what happens now, unless you're Capcom, which is able to remake things. Sometimes. it's an untenable hobby we've chosen.
Yeah, yeah.
AAA gaming kind of has to die.
Mm-hmm. I mean, and don't worry, it's doing a really, really good job killing of killing itself,
but it would have to anyway, just because this can't work.
Yeah.
If these numbers are not sustainable, things cannot cost this much.
Yeah. Business idiots, they need to fucking learn.
Yeah. You cannot make things cost this much. Your standards for success are so high that you've given yourself a prison. Yeah, and we're going to get into it. A lot of this is you Dead Space 2-ing your way across a series of hallways and rooms.
Mm-hmm.
We're going to hit highlights and such and go through it. And there are some cool stuff. I know this has been very negative generalities. There are a couple of cool set pieces that we don't
we'll
spoil
talk about those.
That come in the second part of this.
Yeah. We'll be right back.
Chapter one, what the hell's going on?
Why? Where am I?
They don't think so bad. So we open up with a video conversation between Nicole and Isaac. I was very surprised to find Nicole being an ongoing concern after the last one.
Yeah, she's dead as fuck.
Yeah, she's really dead. But no, she's going to be a big part of this.
Yeah, and I mean, that was like in the or, you know, the end, or is it kind of twist at the end of Dead Space One, right?
Big
like
twist.
You know, he's flying away on the shuttle, and then he looks over, and Nicole's there, and she's draculated, right?
Yeah, she's really happy to be on the Ishimura. You know, it wouldn't be possible without him pushing her into it.
Yeah,
and this is being played for Isaac by a counselor who's interrogating him. The counselor asks Isaac what he found in the Ishimura and if he contacted it.
Yeah.
And we get a little bit flashback to the end of it where Dracula and Nicole is climbing on a desk in front of him.
Yeah.
We've seen that before. Now she's in front of him with a light shining out of her eyes and mouth.
Yeah. She's just kind of appearing and kind of tormenting him. I love the design on Vision Nicole. On Demon Nicole, the light shining out of the eyes and out of the mouth specifically.
It's a nice look.
It's a really good effect. I love Flashlight Girlfriend.
One problem with Nicole I have is that because the last time you heard her was through a cassette, so they put a filter through her voice that is always cassette. And oftentimes I could not understand what Nightmare Girlfriend was saying, especially if anything else was happening.
Yes, I needed to. So I turned on the subtitles, but because of the PC port, like the resolution is really weird. So you put on the subtitles, but I'm playing it at 4K because
it's 2026.
It's 2026. I'm playing in my living room, and so like the subtitles are all really itty bitty.
Yeah,
at the bottom, like a whole full paragraphs of text, itty bitty at the bottom.
And she's doing this while you're getting attacked by thousands of things that all need to settle down as a thing. It is a good visual design. One of the things that the reason why this game and the series could never touch my heart in a million years is that as much as I understand the kind of romantic devotion Isaac has, neither of them are enough of a character for me to believe in this relationship. The first game, I feel like it was using Nicole as just a trope. You know, like the girlfriend who's like, oh, you're remembering your dead wife, and here she is in like sun-dappled sheets thing. And the second one, by trying to continue to lean on it, like it is fully broken for me. I do not believe in these characters. They aren't people. This isn't a thing.
I am to believe in them because they state directly what they are supposed to be to each other. But yeah, you know, she torments him and he kind of loses it. And we cut to Isaac being woken up by a medical technician. And you know, Isaac is kind of being held in a bender closet, wearing a straitjacket. And in terms of like a first impression of this game being, you know, like getting, showing you what it's going to be, the necromorph coming up and mutating him as he's right in your face. This is really fucking cool.
It's very like gory. It's very like, you know, your mom would hate this as a thing. I wish it started slower. Like it is, I understand why it's starting at 10. And then continuing, I did feel a little bit like it didn't have anywhere to go from this a little bit. But it does look cool. And then we get to the first of our kind of like set piece things where you are helpless. You're in a straitjacket and you're running from the psych ward. And necromorphs are everywhere.
Yes.
There are soldiers shooting. I think you're infected. The necromorphs will largely leave you alone. Because you don't have a way to defend yourself anymore. You run into that counselor from before and he acts like he's going to stab you. You know, he was told to liquidate all the patients, and he gets really close to you like he's going to stab you in the gut, and then cuts you loose from this.
And says, Isaac, we're all going to burn for what we did to you. And then he slits his throat with a scalpel. Yeah.
You're no. I took a video of this. I put it on, I think I put it on Blue Sky because of fun computer physics. This guy was fucking boogieing after he died. I had like a really good breakdancing spinning dude, and he would stop. And if I walked up and touched him with my toe, he'd immediately start going back into it. It was really good.
That's so good. I love bugs like that.
Anytime that happens, it's really good. Like, I'm not complaining about that. I think it's great.
Yeah, yeah. But like just that, and like, God, just the way that Isaac falls apart like a crash test dummy. Yep. It's so good.
And his rigging goes off. He gets the flashlight at this point. A woman named Dana radios you and says like, hey, we need to get to her before this form of dementia you have kills you, dementia you have.
Yeah.
Also, there's somebody named Dr. Tiedemann who's looking for you.
I took the wrong note. He's not a doctor. He's like, oh, Tiedemann's looking for you.
Tiedemann. He might be a doctor.
Maybe
he's got a private life. We also are introduced in this section to another other guy. Here we go into a room where, like, he's talking about being tested. We're seeing there are other test subjects.
Yes.
Where Strauss is shown, which is, you know, huge for Dead Space Extraction people. That must have been huge. Mm-hmm. And stuff. So they're kind of just hinting our characters here.
Yeah, yeah. Like, I forgot. Yeah, I guess I didn't make a note of it. Is Strauss the person that you cut loose when you're getting the cutter?
Eventually, but Strauss, you also run into him on a video screen before
going to an interrogation. Oh, yeah, like he's talking to you, yeah.
Yeah, he's talking to a doctor. He's talking to your doctor guy. Mm-hmm. So we go into a zone here. We drop out of the vent, and we get a telekinesis rig from inside the machine. They're slowly giving us our weapons. This is all well and good. Yeah. Teaching us how to use it until we eventually get our plasma cutter from the surgical theater. The plasma cutter, if you haven't played Dead Space 1, is a really cool video game weapon.
Oh, yeah. I love this thing.
Yeah, it can turn horizontal or vertical. It's specifically made for cutting things. Really good weapon.
Yeah, love this thing. Cool, I always weapon. Fully upgrade this first.
You can basically play through the game with it. Mm-hmm. Like, again, in a Resident Evil 4 kind of way, you can do a pistol build if you want. I mostly use this thing.
Yeah.
Because it's great. It's really good, satisfying, feels good. I have nothing bad to say about the plasma cutter.
Nothing bad about the plasma cutter. There's some weapons that, like... The game is really good at, like, making you rotate through your weapons. Like, it does give you resources in a way that forces you to kind of learn all of them, you know? Mm-hmm. But the plasma cutter is a really, really good standby.
Yeah. Yep. We use this to try to cut a guy loose from a table. But a necromorph gets him, of course. We got the cutter, but the necromorph got the guy.
Yeah. We're finding text logs and audio logs throughout the game, really, but kind of in this area. You know, psychiatrists are trying to manage the patients who are getting unruly by giving them memory erasing drugs. There's a fun detail here where they're like, it sucks. I have to keep explaining to this guy why his jaw's broken every morning.
Yeah. And he can't talk back. We grab stasis from another operating bed. We're basically harvesting from operating beds.
Yeah.
And get stuck in this malfunctioning elevator with the Nicole apparition, who is telling us, we're going to find out she's speaking through the marker, through this Eldritch collectivism.
Yeah.
That's in our head, the psychosis we have, you know, saying make us whole.
Yeah.
This kind of corpse collectivism to make a big evil supermoon.
Yeah. These are kind of arc words here. It's like, make us whole. You owe me $20 for lunch the other $20. Day.
No wifing in the club.
No wifing in the club?
I love this is from the old Slender Man meme. There's a song called No Wifing in the Club, Give Me $20. And there are all these edits. That's what Slender Man wanted, was $20. Okay. But the song begins with No Wifing in the Club. And I love that phrase has just been stuck in my head for a long time. No Wifing in the Club. Can't wife in the club.
No. We're introduced to pukers here. Yep. We kind of like round a corner.
Spitter
to
here.
This spitter. We round a corner seeing a doc getting dissolved, like a guy is just vomiting on this. This is one of the few enemies that is not made any less dangerous by dismembering it.
Yeah. Yeah. Which is, you know, a weird kind of move in the dismemberment game.
Yeah.
Through here. Not a whole lot to say about these guys. One of the things this game doesn't do as much as I thought it would is when they do introduce guys that are different, they don't do mix-ups as much as you might expect. Mm-hmm. Like, sometimes you will fight these guys with other guys. But there's not as much as, like, this is now a color added to the palette. I'm always going to be watching for a ranged attack at the same time.
Yeah.
Like, it doesn't happen quite as much. It's more like, it still feels more set PC. Like, this is the highlight for this enemy.
Yeah.
As a thing. Or here's now the wave of this type of enemy in this series.
They'll pop up, but also, like, these guys are not effectively that different. Like,
no.
They don't have a they don't have the market cornered on projectiles in this game. Sometimes, like, different versions of them will have spit that slows you down. And that's kind of it. This is just kind of like, you know, put into a mix-up. It is an anonymous transformer for you to shoot that occasionally can attack out of the dark and knock you out of aiming by putting you into a stagger animation.
I thought all of them could slow you down, but I could be wrong. Like, if they actually got a direct hit. Not sure. Reach a hall breach. This is a mechanic that the one-to-one comparison here reminds me a lot of blasting glass in Spec Ops The Line.
Yeah, yeah.
As a mechanic that's introduced early on in the game, like, it's going to show up a lot and then just ceases to exist.
Yeah.
Of manipulating hall breaches.
Yeah,
There's a little shutter activator you have to shoot. Everyone has their standard, you know, pistol.
Yeah, if you the safety device does require everybody to have a gun.
Yeah, well, it's a good Second Amendment. You are safer with a gun.
Yeah, true. Yeah,
everyone would be safer if you had a gun because you can turn off the fucking call breach.
We're going to make sure. Yeah.
Yeah, you can push buttons from a distance. It's safe as shit.
Yeah. You walk into a room that is full of necromorphs and then something happens to break the window.
Yeah.
And they're sucked out and you have a limited amount of time as you're being sucked out to shoot the shutter to close it. This is introduced as a way to deal with a bunch of enemies. Mm-hmm. If you have the resources to do it, this goes away after the first third of the game.
Yeah, it feels like there'd be more of this. Minor complaint, but it's just something I noticed because I was like, oh, this all kind of mix up these encounters. Mm-hmm. There's a shopping kiosk here, so we can buy our first rig suit, and we get a very cinematic angle of him going into the destroyer armor from Thor 1.
Yeah.
Again.
Iron Man 2 and 3 had come out in between these two. So they needed to make sure that you had a whole bunch of suit up animations because it was all the rage.
Iron Man 2 energy.
Yeah.
To the suits. And then we fight a big kind of mini boss thing.
Yeah.
This big monster that walks around on two arms. And this is where some of the combat doesn't work for me, where all I did was slow it down and shoot it in the limb.
Yeah.
And it would jump at me and I'd slow it down and shoot at the limb.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Just kind of kept doing it.
I've got the key. I've got a way to loop through this. And the only way that they have to make this more interesting, the only way they're capable of doing that is, again, make it dark, make it that they come out of every direction forever.
Is this the guy, or does this happen in the next boss fight where he goes down and then when you go to loot him, he's alive for a second and knocks you down? And then he dumps his little loot pinata?
It happens somewhere in the first third of the game, but
it's
I forget.
This guy or the next guy. That felt like a very cheap trick to me, just like a dumb jump scare.
Yeah.
Anywho, we take him out and we reach the emergency ward hangar. And Dana says, "Listen, you've been on Titan State. You know what the hell's going on? I need answers." Mm-hmm. Dana says, "You've been on Titan Station for 3 years. You've been fed memory suppressors because your dementia that's progressing is killing you."
Yes.
You've got the marker in your brain,
mm-hmm.
and it's getting bigger.
Yeah. And she is the only person who can save you. Hey, you need to get to me.
Yes.
And so she's the person who's kind of giving you the path, to follow. And she's got a route for you that is going to take us into chapter 2, out of the medical ward and into kind of a civilian space.
Yeah.
We're out of a facility and we're into just a place where people live, which and is immediately just a huge sigh
huge
of relief.
Breath of fresh air.
Yeah.
A medical ward is not that interesting. We've been in those forever in video games. Mm-hmm. This we're getting advertisements, we're getting signage, we're getting kind of feeling world building.
Mm-hmm.
This is what is missing 100% from the first game.
Yes.
Very happy to be here.
Yeah. And we've known that this shit's cool for a very long time. See System Shock 2.
Yeah. System, kind of originally did it, exactly.
Yeah.
So another patient, Strauss, radios us, talking about the memory drugs, and he's being pursued by monsters and stuff. He's going to be kind of our deuteragonist for a little bit until he eventually becomes an enemy, but he's doing stuff as well.
Yes.
Similar situation to us.
Yeah.
The level kind of weaves in and out of apartments, and it's neat. We just see mm-hmm. residential features. There's little set pieces here. There's a man and woman running away from their mother-in-law, mm-hmm. who then when you go into that place, she turned.
Oh,
go into the apartment. There's little set piece things here that are neat.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
I like just getting into the laundromat and seeing all of the different, Zug.
Yeah. Bold, Tide. Yeah. It's great. All I want to see is soda brands and video games.
Yeah. That's exactly what I need. I need to see soap
seed.
Brands.
Give me Demon Seed.
Yeah. Demon Seed, please.
Yeah.
You also get the Leaper enemies here. The kind of torsos with scorpion tails that just suck.
Yeah,
they
these things are not good.
Yeah, will drop on the ceiling from you. And a very long animation. If they're low on health and they go into a grab attack and you do the button mashing, occasionally Isaac will take about 15 to 20 minutes to yank its tail off like he's trying to start a lawnmower.
Yeah. Relatable.
Mm-hmm.
Dana tells us that Tiedemann found us. He started trying to build his own marker here on the station.
Yes.
The marker was the operative thing that's causing the necromorphs in the first one.
Yeah.
Marfs.
The marfs, yeah.
Necromorphs.
It's just it's a terrible idea. This is what made stuff go bad on Aegis 7 in the first game on the Ishimura. Tiedemann found us and, there's a whole bunch of backstory, like the government suppressed knowledge of the markers, but has been trying to experiment with them. There are a lot of notes about Tideman wanting to get away from doing planet cracking for resources, and he thinks the marker has convinced him that markers are their way to get around that.
The marker is able to produce energy.
Yes.
This is something that is not as underlined and characters don't talk as much about in the game, which is kind of weird because it's important to motivation. It's like why they're building the Torment Nexus is because it's unlimited energy.
Yes.
Like, and you know, they've been doing planet cracking and stuff. Things are bad in the future. They need the energy.
Yes.
So, but it seems like that motivation should be pretty front and center. Mm-hmm. Like we kind of switch to the cult pretty quick feeling.
We do.
In terms of a want for this.
Yeah.
We reach a subway station. And we get Nicole coming back, your nightmare girlfriend. Mm-hmm. And then like this alien spawner kind of comes up that makes, you know, using bodies to kind of send them at us.
I love the revivers or whatever they are, these things. Give me something in a pale cardigan that makes zombies.
Yes. Yeah. Yeah. Like the chart in 1993.
Yeah.
And the pale cardigans versus the zombies. Or versus the song zombie, not the zombies. They were in the 60s. We get the subway car moving, but it crashes and we're hanging from it. We're getting out of like The Last of Us. We're hanging upside down, shooting enemies.
Yes.
Until we're cut loose. I get sick of going from set piece to set piece.
We are literally on rails here.
Yeah, let me play the game. Like, don't stop putting me into new, unique situations. When I think about contrast with this, in addition to Resident Evil 4, which oftentimes does new situations through gameplay modes where they let you play. So, like, you're in the village, which is about being surrounded and about multiple ways of ingress and ingress through different shelters. Then you go through these small little set of farmhouses where there are lots of dynamite and traps and such. Mm-hmm. You know, you go through these areas that do have themes. You go through the sniper section that looks like Blighttown here, but they're all play-based themes. Same thing with Half-Life 2.
Yes.
When I think about games that do this thing that ostensibly I'm saying I don't like here, but they do it in a way that I like, the difference is they're play-based.
Yeah.
In Half-Life 2, it's like, okay, now I'm in a vehicle section. Now I'm in going from like sand dune to sand dune, keeping away from the Outlions. Now I'm going from like clearing houses on the coast. Here, the set pieces are all little gameplay modes. It's like different kinds of turret sections or wave-based combat arenas. Mm-hmm. As opposed to something that like, and I guess those are play-based, but they're taking more control or fucking with your controller, the scenario design, rather than like letting you just control your avatar and fuck around with the verbs that you've learned.
It's so breathless. There is no like seeing the space, getting the tool, realizing what you need to do, having that little moment where you put the plan together and then execute on it. I'm not against, when we talk about things, when we knock this for being on rails or for being breathless or for being set piece to set piece, I am not against a game having a sense of propulsion. What I want is for the game to use the fact that it's a game and is giving me power to do stuff in a space, you know, like I want it to use what it is to effect as opposed to just kind of like picking my guy up with a mouse and putting him in a situation where all you can do is this particular thing until, you know, it puts you in a tube that you will walk through to get to the next place where you kind of do the same thing. I want to discover things. And this game doesn't really let you discover shit.
It's not really about that. There are narrative things to discover and kind of world building things to discover, but mechanically there's not a lot of it.
Yeah.
This brings us into chapter 3 after the train crashes.
Yeah.
After we defend ourselves from the Last of Us segment. We emerge in a shopping mall.
Yep.
Again, great environment.
Yep.
With a toy store, and we get a real highlight enemy of the game people really like, the Swarm, which is a swarm of little kids. If a little kid turns into a necromorph, they turn into long-legged little shits.
Yes.
And you get to fight like 1,000 Dennis the Menaces who run at you.
And it's so funny, like when you just start like picking them up and like slamming them. It's like a famous statue, it's like a Greek mythology figure, but it's just like a big bearded guy just like wrestling a bunch of babies, like holding them up like he's about to spike them.
One of the things I thought of in this is that if a bunch of kids this age were just attacking you, it would look exactly the same.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
They wouldn't have to be necromorphs because they all go down in like one hit. Mm-hmm. You can pick them up and spike them. You can telekinesis, you know, like you can do all these things with their corpses and stuff. If say like 30 kids were attacking me, I would fight them exactly like Isaac fights these necromorphs, and they wouldn't have to be necromorph kids.
Yeah.
It's just like, oh, this is like a kid fighting simulator.
Yeah.
You know, I thought they delisted it. But at last. Here it is.
Yeah. And this is transgressive, right? Like most zombie media, but especially games, really, really shy away from the idea of you're killing a fucking kid.
Well, kids just disappear from the world once an outbreak happens. Like there are no, you know, ganados who are children, like as a thing. And this is doing a thing with this. Yeah. And I respect it. I wish that they did something more than just swarm you.
It's also very modal. If these guys are showing up, nothing else is showing up.
Yeah. Just the fact that like they're called the swarm and most enemies swarm me. Mm-hmm. But in a vacuum, I think these are good.
I think they're called the pack.
Oh, you're right.
Which is weird because they do not operate as a pack. No. There's another enemy that very pointedly operates as a pack.
Yeah. Those are called the swarm, actually. It's weird.
Yeah.
Dana says, you know, steer clear of the other patient who keeps radioing us.
Yeah.
You know, he's a psychopath. He killed his wife and child by dead space extraction today.
Yes. And the path that she is leading us on takes us through a unitology recruitment center.
Yes.
Unitology is this in-world religion. It's a cult that worships the markers. This was kind of a bit of like subtext in the first game. Like certain people on the Ishimura, like different crew members, subscribed to this, and they were some of the first that started like sabotaging things when it became clear that a marker was in play. Here, like it is, they just have like recruitment centers. Like it is a part of society that there are just these unitologists who, you know, worship this force in a way that the team assures us is not meant to be inspired by Scientology. Please God, do not sue us.
It's also very similar to Unitarians, which is the Simpsons cult.
No, Unitarians is just an actual religion.
What is the Simpsons called?
I think it's the Unitologists.
Movementologists. Movementologists.
The Movementarians. You're free to leave whenever you want.
But we want to ask why. This is cool. I like going through this recruitment center.
Yeah.
You know, and we get into this like trash chute system to get into this residential block, the Cassini Towers. And these apartments were owned by cultists. So we get to see all is not right with these Scientologists, their altars and everything.
Yeah.
We get through this informational museum about the Unitology founder, Michael Altman, here. And he found a marker originally at a crater at the Yucatan Peninsula. And that's what the cult is founded off of. As billions of members across the Sol system, a very popular cult.
Yes. I love that he found it in the Yucatan. It's implied that this is the meteor that killed the dinosaurs.
Yes. It's really good. Yeah. The Beast of Yucatan Flats.
Yeah.
I'm trying to imagine a video game that introduced a religion where the religion wasn't evil.
Uh-huh.
And then I was trying to think of like the idea of introducing a new religion and having it not be suspicious at all.
Yeah.
Like, here's a new religion. Mm-hmm. Like, good God, that's alarm bells. That's all red flags, you know, in fiction and in real life. Like, we don't need new ones.
Yeah, you think about it, like, oh, yeah, the followers of the apocalypse. No, they eventually became humanitarians. The initial followers were scary as shit.
Yeah, exactly, yeah. very much so.
Yeah. Tideman wants to stop us, and Tideman is not a doctor. He, like, runs this facility, and he controls the military.
He's Dr. General.
Yeah, he's a Dr. General. He has a gunship that is, like, flying around the building trying to hunt us. Yes.
Where the Dr. Generals do their shoot surgery.
Yes.
Dana urges us to get into the Unitology Church.
Yeah. And she says, like, oh, I'm hiding here because it's one of the only places that that Tideman can't monitor. Separation of church and state, she says, which is ridiculous, which is very not funny. Ridiculous, but it's very funny that just, like, citing, a version of the U.S. Constitution hundreds of years in the future in space.
Yeah. And like it's an ontological truth. That's like a Grant Morrison villain would say that.
Yeah.
You know, and then make it so, like, the Doom Patrol couldn't go into the church.
Uh-huh.
Like, so Isaac says, you know, this is the last place we should be. He's freaked out by it. Not freaked out enough, as we'll find out.
Yeah.
The cultist necromorphs are really fast and aggressive. We have these guys. And the alien spawners, the Cardigans, love to make them. Yes. We're going to fight a lot of those as we Dead Space 2 our way through this.
Yes.
We climb through a vent, and on the other side, Nicole sneak attacks us with a syringe. ghosts have syringes now.
Yeah.
And we had to button mash to struggle against her. Again, this would stand out more if I hadn't been button mashing a lot.
Yeah. She disappears, and Isaac is trying to stab himself in the face with it, but also resisting himself.
He's button mashing himself
In
the face.
You get to a central chamber. We get some sneaky hit and run tactics with some crawly guys. These are not the stalkers that we find, different crawly guys. But we've got cultist zombies and the bugs. I think eventually somewhere around here, we ended up fighting the pregnant, these big, round belly guys who, if you kill them the wrong way, they spawn the deadliest enemy in the game. Which is just a swarm of like little dancing fingers that will come up on you and drain your health as you button mash and try and pull them off of you.
They do look cool.
Yeah.
How does Necromorph get pregnant? How is Necromorph formed?
We must do Way and Stain Marker.
Girl in R who killed her babby, you can't frick the back. This goes into chapter 5. Dana says, hey, meet me at the funerary wing at the church. So we had to pass through these rooms lined with people in cryopods, and we get a hallucination of them all struggling and screaming with their guts out. Here, monsters attack from inside the pods. You know, we're getting this hallucination set piece to actual just monster fight pipeline. This game likes to do. Passing through this requires temporarily turning off gravity and then using stasis to freeze these gimbals so we can put our arms into place on them. This is a thing. There were low gravity sections in the first one, but it was much more restricted. You can only kind of grapple onto certain places and stuff. Low gravity sections in these aren't great, but they are more free than the first one.
They're more free. You can move more quickly, and they're much rarer, actually. Yes. The first game loved putting you in zero G. Up to and including for at least one very annoying and frustrating boss fight.
Yeah.
Here it is used sparingly. And I tend to, it doesn't bother me here at all.
No, me either. Like it's a nice change of pace, which is what I wanted it to be the first time.
Yeah. You do find the schematic for the Ripper. This is a returning weapon. This is a trap. It feels cool as shit because you're like holding out a buzzsaw in front of you. This thing is garbage.
It can be useful against the pack.
Yes.
Sometimes, but it's very one enemy kind of appropriate.
Yes.
There's some kind of more encounters in the upper levels of the tower. Eventually we reach Dana, and she is betraying us because the game told us A, so B must be true. She's a higher up in the Unitology Church.
Yeah.
She taunts us. Like, there never was a cure. You know, we want to get a cure for her dementia. EarthGov is not going to leave us alone because we're a threat. We have the marker inside our head.
Yeah.
We're building it in our head as like a mind construct.
Well, it's not just that we built it. We have the schematic inside of our head. We did build it. The marker that shows up at the end of this, the one that caused this, it's artificial. The Tideman got a hold of us to make it.
We slept. We built in our sleep with our brain.
Yeah.
And she wants this. So he wants to stop it and get the marker. They want to worship the marker, bringing this convergence in the Hera Galaxy, which we're going to find out is all the corpses becoming a moon.
Yes. Yeah. So Tideman wants to build it for energy, wants to avoid the convergence. The Unitologists want you to finish it, to be reincorporated into it to trigger the convergence is what it is.
A cool non-standard game over here would have been if you could shoot yourself.
Oh, yeah.
Like, it's just like really an ethical thing for Isaac to do at this point.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
You know?
Just get rid of it.
Yeah, I got the thing in my head.
Mm-hmm.
One last piece
seems pretty easy. Well, then they could have gotten Strauss, too. So you would have had to go
Strauss, shoot yourself.
Yeah.
You know? Suicide pact with Strauss.
Yeah.
The game. She orders her men to take you away, but T-Man's gunship shows up and blows out the windows, killing everybody. Yeah. We had to get into a vent just barely. And now we're in a sequence where we're running away from like a big necromorph while the gunship attacks. Again, another set piece. Like, we're not really a gameplay part.
Yeah, no, this is, it's just a QTE is what it is. Yeah. This was shown in like preview material being like, check out the badass like boss fights you're gonna do.
Yeah.
Like, this is like a marquee monster for the game, and you don't really do anything against it.
A frustrating thing here too is the idea of introducing the military gives me a feeling of BioShock, where like maybe we're gonna have three different factions. Like, there's me and I'm against the necromorphs and I'm against the military, but they're against each other. That's not really what happens. You don't fight the military directly in this. Like, they're not like a faction. We're going to see in set pieces and see them fight from time to time, but mostly they just get slaughtered by the necromorphs. There's none of that like system-based turning them against each other stuff.
No.
It doesn't want to be that kind of game. It doesn't want to see that control. It has you on a roller coaster.
It dangles it in front of you. And like, I don't know, in my head, I think, like I need to adjust my tactics for this, right? Like suddenly I need to fight stuff in a different way. Yeah.
Like giving, you know, having your zombies and then having zombies with guns that behave with, you know, with AI would be different.
Uh-huh.
And we're just not going to do it. And again, like, you know, they got half their team harvested to Call of Duty. You know, they were going for a thing and people really love this. It's just not what I wanted.
Yeah. Yeah.
You know? My answer, what can make Gary enjoy a game? It's not the answer Ravel wanted.
It is worth remarking upon when it dangles in a more interesting idea in front of you, I think.
Yeah. And not that rare of an interesting idea. Again, BioShock did it, System Shock did it to a degree with the security systems and the whatever the monsters were called in that.
Yeah.
So you run away from it and go through some airlock drops into another cultist apartment block. Bring us into chapter 6.
Yeah, so this is one of the times when you go back to a space and it's worse. Somebody has gone through and started drawing bigger sigils and stuff.
Yes.
It's darker. It took me forever to realize I was in the same building that I was in before.
Because it's not above games just to kind of have very similar buildings.
Our first handler, rather, Dana, you know, sucks. Dump it. She died. She was trying to use us. We get kind of our middle handler here. We get Strauss radioing with the truth, saying, hey, the marker is in government sector. We need to get there and tear it down. Like, we're the ones who built it. We're the ones who can undo it. But Strauss is unstable. He is seeing hallucinations of his dead son. And, you know, saying like, he wants me to follow the steps. You know, step one, crawl into the dark machine.
Yeah. This is effectively foreshadowed, or like him referring to the steps over and over and slowly finding out what the steps are and then doing the steps is cool.
Yes.
That got worked on me. It's not like high art dread, but I thought it was pretty cool.
Yeah. Step one, crawl into the dark machine. The dark machine is a good sentence.
Pretty good. You know, good album title and a good sentence and like into it. So the combat in the lobby of this building is very hard. Like, I also found this frustrating. We got the big guys, the preggers. How is necromorph get pregnant? Real problems. And there's just, this goes on forever. And this is when we start running into those landmine cysts we were talking about. And they are placed with a game designer's malice, not a natural anything.
I keep on complaining about how dark this game is. Like, it is just dark enough to hide gotchas. Is what it is. It's not dark for effect. It feels like.
It's a thing too where, you know, people could be saying like, "Hey, pump the brightness," and I do. Like, when I play video games, I tend to pump the brightness because I want to see the things. I will go beyond the recommended brightness settings because my eyes ain't so good. But even with that, you still run into it with us.
Yeah, my eyes ain't so good. They old. Also, people would say like, "Oh, you're meant to go more slowly. You're meant to, you have a flashlight when you have your weapon aimed." The flashlight is narrow. They're placed in such a way that like they're behind geometry and stuff. They're like intentionally put in shadows, even if you are moving slowly. It does feel a little bit like, you know, die, like come apart like a crash test dummy a few times, memorize where these are, and then shoot them ahead of time.
I cannot stress to people enough how slowly I move through video games generally, including this one. The other thing I'll say about finding things, and this is going to make me sound insane, but because I spent a lot of time thinking about this game, comparing it to Resident Evil 4, I don't like the distance I am from Isaac in this. And that's something I noticed in the first one too. This does not feel like a traditional over-the-shoulder third person. I'm a little too close or a little too far away. He takes up a little bit more of the frame than I want.
Yeah.
It feels awkward to me. And this also, the reason why it matters is that he would block my line of sight for these things from time to time. So it's a minor nitpick, but like it's still enough that it bugged me. Like,
Isaac would see it. Isaac would see that.
Exactly. Like, what does this... I had a moment of playing this where I thought, I would actually probably like this quite a bit more in first person. Like, you would lose some of the visceral, like, watching Isaac be dismembered shit, but just pull the camera out. I'm a big boy. I can handle that. And in first person, Isaac would see things. I would have a better aiming, would be a little bit easier. Mm-hmm. Like, so the speed of the combat would work a little bit better. There'd be a lot of advantages this would have to being first person, I think.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. So we get past all these cyst guys, and we cyst is a slur.
Mm-hmm.
What? Sorry.
Oh, okay. Sorry. Fun no, of, no. Making okay. Fun of idiots. Making fun of idiots on Twitter.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, cyst, cool. Yeah. These cysthets, cysthet landmines.
Yeah.
And get to this warehouse room full of storage containers that are arranged in a this is going to be a fight kind of boss configuration, Last of Us style. Here's a bunch of waist high shit.
Yes. And these new enemies attack. I'm kind of split on how I feel about these guys. I was initially really impressed. Like, I mean, like back in the day, right? It's like, clever girls. They're like raptors. They're hiding around corners. They're trying to like sneak attack you. Playing it this time, it is very clear that they're like moving around in ways that they ought not just to be able to charge you from a blind angle.
I ended up liking them because they were different.
Yes.
It was the kind of thing where I liked them, but I got sick of seeing them.
Mm-hmm.
Like, as I had more of them, I kind of got it.
Yeah.
You know, and part of the game not doing as many, like, mix-ups or doing mix-ups where the two enemy types, like, interface that much.
Mm-hmm.
Like, I didn't like that much.
Yeah.
I liked it running into them the first time. They are definitely working and moving in ways that they're not supposed to be able to work to get dead angles because all the walls are porous because it's dead space. They also use the verticality. They use the ceilings and walls and stuff.
Yeah.
In a way, I think it's kind of interesting.
Yeah. So it is like, to me, it is like, okay, yes, here's something different. Here's here is a room that you have to take apart in a different way. But ultimately, it is just a way for something to come out of the dark and knock you over.
Yes.
which is all this game's combat is.
What can happen to you is too limited to make these, like, I judge them on a curve of what this game does, but I wish that they were in a different game that played different.
Mm-hmm.
I guess would be a way to put it.
Yeah. But yeah, you're going to run into several of these rooms later on. It's just very funny when they pop up because it is a clear fear kind of thing where like the AI for these things was designed for a very particular kind of geometry.
Yes.
That's not a mark against it, but once you see it, it's hard not to see it.
Yeah. It's part of a kind of a series of things that lead to an artificiality kind of gaminess feeling.
Yes.
Kind of everything.
Yeah.
We get back to the shopping center concourse. There's a woman named Ellie shooting the necromorphs, trying to attack her. We've dumped bad ghost girlfriend and bad girlfriend for good girlfriend.
Mm-hmm.
She says, stay away. Says literally, other people are just a liability, so we can figure out her character arc in advance.
Yeah.
And says, don't follow her because people only let people down.
Yes.
We're going to change her wild ways.
Of course, the guideline takes us right through the door she went through. So,
guideline says you can fix her.
Yeah.
The guideline just spells out in cursive, like, you know, Sundare. And then, like, you just go through.
So, we need to get to the government center. Strauss has told us this. And the path that we're on takes us through, it's like a nursery and preschool.
Yeah.
Standout stage in this. This rules.
It's pretty great. I knew everything that was going to happen.
Oh, yeah. Right away.
But it's all just stuff I like.
Yeah.
You know? And because we had just done a repeat area, it was kind of a bummer. Like, it was good to have another set piece.
Yes.
You know, and we still got at least like one more good set piece coming.
Mm-hmm.
In one of the first rooms, a really memorable part, people cite in this game where this one begs this mutated baby to come to her.
Mm-hmm.
Its head is on backwards and the baby explodes.
Yeah.
She hugs it and it explodes.
Mm-hmm. Just immediately painting the window red. Like just gone. Yeah.
Pretty great.
Mm-hmm. I love this. It's very, like, it's very clearly, like, you know, anything that's going to explode is made of this, yellow infected sac kind of stuff. The whole body is this.
Yes.
And she is hallucinating. She's trying to comfort this baby.
Yeah.
It's
a mummer's baby.
Yeah.
We find notes in a classroom talking about how kids have started playing more roughly. Everyone has an imaginary friend now. The marker psychosis is getting into everyone.
Yes. Yeah. The combat centerpiece of this is in the Cafegymatorium.
Mm-hmm.
You have to, hack into. There's a hacking mini game you can do. It's just rotating a stick and finding the right spot to press the A button.
Yeah.
You do it a lot in this, but you have to like transition the scenery on the stage in order to like shift the configuration of the room to open the way out. And this starts like a bunch of pack coming in. And then also we get our first of the blackened necromorphs, kind of the varsity versions of the regular monsters that we've seen.
Yeah. Similar tactics and stuff, just tougher.
Yep.
More aggressive. Nicole appears when you pass through the playground, taunting us about how convenient it is that destroying the marker will make all of this go away. Mm-hmm. It's like, that is very convenient, actually. Like, I would like that. Mm-hmm. This is bad to me.
Also, nobody's promising that my problems are going to go away if the marker's destroyed.
Right now, my problem is necromorphs.
Yeah.
You know, so like...
Yeah, I don't know.
Seems like there's a tie to those things. What problems do I have other than that?
Yeah. I mean, like, if we're triaging things.
I'm just trying to survive. Yeah.
If we're triaging things, most of my solutions pass through getting rid of the necromorphs right now. So
I would like to get rid of that marker.
Yeah.
Ellie radios us, says she found Strauss, and we tell her not to kill him.
Yeah.
Here, because, you know, he's a good guy, actually.
Yeah. But he's begging to be killed. He's raving and he's like acting erratically, like
he doesn't want to do the
steps. Kind of attacking her.
We have to be like, no, he's not well. Yeah.
Yeah.
We find them eventually in the transport hub, and Tiedemann shuts down the power to the public sector, including life support. And we talk to him. Tiedemann's real cold about this.
Yeah.
And then we fight a charger who attacks here. They charge all the monsters on loan from the Left 4 Dead collection.
Yeah, it's just I think they're called brutes in this.
Yes.
Yeah. You just have to shoot at their yellow, the tiny yellow weak points on their shoulders in between their armor plates.
You slow them down. Mm-hmm. And so you can aim.
Yeah.
We want to go restore to power so we can take the train out of here. We're still going to the government center. Something that kept popping through my head through this is the Jonathan Richman absolute banger government center. Mm-hmm. I don't know if you know that song.
I don't know that one. I know there's a song by Brand New from their first album called Logan to Government Center, which is what I kept on thinking of when they kept on talking about Government Center.
As long as we're thinking of a silly song.
Yes.
For this.
Yeah.
Yeah. Jonathan Richman's going to go down to the Government Center, the Rockin' Government Center, to make all the secretaries feel better with all their stamps and their letters.
Yeah.
It's very pure. And I like to think of Isaac doing that.
Yeah. Your version's very pure. In my version, you can't trust women. And also maybe you're going to do bad things to them.
Oh,
Brand
geez.
New. Yeah.
I don't know anything about Brand New. I didn't have an emo phase. So
yeah.
Learning about Brand New now.
It's a real case of, we probably should have taken those lyrics seriously, huh?
Yeah. Oh, he's a bad guy? I don't know anything about this.
Yeah, no, he's a
music
bad guy.
Music I don't like, I don't pay attention to.
Yeah.
I'm bad about wanting to know things.
When I spun the wheel to pick the emo band that I was going to get into, you can't win them all.
Yeah, it's just every once in a while you get 00, Snake Eyes.
Oof. Anyway, we're trying to get to Government Center, but the tracks are all fucked up.
Yep. I run to a guardian. These guys, they're fused to a wall and they spew out a bunch of little tentacle. Two more guys at us.
Love these things visually. Very frustrating in practice, because those tentacles will just keep on, again, shooting you with tiny projectiles that will stagger you, sometimes knock you over. Oh, my balls!
Yeah.
Yes.
And my groin! And then, we fix an elevator, and this takes us up to the solar array control, but it goes on lockdown. We had to find this dead body of a technician named Howard Phillips. Clever.
Get it?
Yep. And it's like so not Lovecraftian. Mm-hmm. Like, I understand what they're doing. Same thing with like Isaac.
Yeah.
The thing is, like, this does not actually evoke the sci-fi you're going for.
No.
And Howard Phillips and carry it to the scanner to get into the mainframe. Get fucked.
His story. I don't know. Maybe it's Lovecraftian if you consider he was in a place that he didn't want to be for a long time.
Yeah. If you zoom out enough.
Yeah.
You know, it can be.
I'm thinking about just him being in Brooklyn because.
That's true.
Yeah. Yeah. There are just lots of logs of him losing his mind because he keeps putting in for transfers and he keeps on getting denied by an automated system. Yeah.
Because he married Sonia Green. And he just felt weird about it afterwards.
Yeah.
So we use the telekinesis to these blocks to place it in the mainframe, shoot all the circuits. We end the lockdown here and go outside to realign some solar array collectors. We're in the chore section of this.
Yeah.
And then Tiedemann starts a process of cutting us off from the Rockin' Government Center.
Mm-hmm.
He does not want us to get there.
Yeah.
To get to this transport hub, Isaac boards this ejector seat and launches himself towards the transport hub. A very insane thing to do.
Yeah.
Here, and we had to steer around debris in this little ejector seat.
Yeah.
Here to get there in time.
You know, as he does, like, Iron Man flight.
Yes.
It's just so clear, like, oh, we have power armor. Let's do Iron Man shit.
Why not? And then Iron Man is huge at the time. I get it.
Yeah, yeah. I get it. It's just funny to look at it in hindsight. You know, you start seeing the patterns.
Yes.
When you get enough distance and look back at you know, what was clearly just in the water.
Yeah. We get back, the transport hub starts exploding. We wait for Ellie to open the door to a factory that we can go to escape, and we're fighting off waves of enemies here that you can't totally destroy. Big pet peeve of mine in video games where, like, it's unclear whether I'm supposed to fight everything or kill everything, or if I'm just supposed to, like, hold out.
Ellie does shout, "Isaac, you can't kill them all. Get in the door." It is one of many times where somebody yells at you, "You need to get away." But in previous situations, you do actually just have to kill everything until the door will open.
It's not always true.
Yeah.
Like, sometimes it's true. It's not. Yeah. So that's where it's frustrating. The idea of this as a set piece does not bother me.
Yeah. No.
It's not knowing.
It's just like, okay, you know, hold off as we get the door open and then escape, you know, maybe within an inch of your life. Sealing off the stuff that's chasing you. Cool. Good. That's a good action, you know, tried and true action trope.
Works just perfect. Again, very action trope for a movie, though, you know, as opposed to chapter 8, Ellie temporarily powers down the factory so we can get inside. We had to kind of fly around this production line using stasis to freeze these dangerous parts and using telekinesis to place thrusters to move doors here, kind of like a puzzle section of the game, a little bit more of a navigation thing. I'm glad to take a little bit of a break.
Yeah, yeah. Like, there's no real combat here. Those little, like, three tentacle head enemies show up in this, like they did in the Zero-G sections from the first game. It's very limited, though. This is a nice little change of pace as you're just working through the guts of a machine.
And while this is happening, Strauss is deteriorating. He's talking about making Ellie work through the steps. He talks about the fourth step as being a big one and contains the needle, but does not specify what you do with the needle.
Yes.
Which we're going to find out. Spoiler, it's the scary thing you can think of with the needle.
Yeah, it is the scariest thing that a needle can do.
There are in kind of a limited number of things. Out of, like, the four things a needle can do, this is the scary one.
Yeah. And is also, like, the standout scene of the game.
Yeah. So we get to chapter 9 here. We need to reactivate this tram, which will take us the rest of the way to the Rockin' Government Center. This chapter is mostly just combat. They're making up for the last chapter.
Yes.
We get this new necromorph that has a job. He's in a lab coat. And he drops little spiders. He's a scientist made of spiders.
Yes. These things, it's... They move around kind of like the mimics they move around like kind of like the mimics in Prey if they never coalesced, you know how they kind of like freak out like plasm. They just kind of keep doing that as they go around.
Yes. Yeah.
We rebuild a gearbox to power up a tram. This is where an enemy, so I was redline on my health. There was no ammo, no health pickups. It was just, you know, I just kept on dying over and over again to this little enemy that I'm not sure what it was, but it would do me in, and you go into, a 2 to 3 hour long death animation of it ripping Isaac's head off and taking its place. And then Isaac's body moving around. With it as its head now.
Very cool in a vacuum.
Yeah.
The idea of it piloting you as a little, like, ratatouille-ing you.
Uh-huh.
Like I've never seen Ratatouille, but that's my understanding is what happens in that movie.
Yeah, yeah. The rat rips off his head and takes the place of the head.
Yeah, it becomes a chef, I think. I'm not unclear, but that's a cool idea, but just watching it over and over sucks.
Yeah. Maybe put a flag on that animation and make it so that I just die. But like after I see it two or three times. Yeah.
Put that on every animation.
Yeah.
So we eventually rebuild this gearbox. Nicole appears. Isaac shouts, you know, "You're not Nicole, you're a ghost." And she gets him in his face and goes, "Who am I then?" Kind of Joker-like. We ride the tram and we see that Ishimura is docked at the station. And I sighed a lot of this, because the Ishimura is not a holy location to me.
Yeah.
It's a place full of boring corridors that I don't want to revisit.
The Ishimura is the mining ship from the first game.
Yes.
That is, you know, suddenly here and has been here the whole time.
Yes. I am very susceptible to revisiting a holy location. This is not a location I have any affection for.
Remember when this came out, it had only been like 2 years-ish.
Yeah.
You know, so like we're going to be going back to it. Like
playing the hits. Pretty
yeah.
Early.
Yeah.
Ellie says it was destroyed in a terrorist attack. But we go, no, you know, it wasn't actually destroyed in a terrorist attack. There was this whole thing with necromorphs, but the tram stops. The tracks are jammed. So we had to clear a tentacle from the tracks. It's holding an orb and we had to overheat this orb. Mm-hmm. And then we do it while enemies are after us.
Yeah.
Another basic unit of video game and kind of design of you having to do something on a concentrated object while many enemies attack.
Yes. So the tram's fixed, but then the tram's broken again because
Tideman. Bad news about the tram.
Yeah. Tideman uses a solar beam to cut the station in half, including the tracks that we're on. So we need to, you know, get over there. We need to get to the government center, rocking or otherwise. And Isaac's like, all right, well, I'm going to have to go into the Ishimura fans and use the gravity tethers to hold the tracks together temporarily so we can cross.
In chapter 10, the first part of the Ishimura is just like a nostalgia walk. It's combat free. Getting, you know, audio logs of what happened afterwards, you know, cleanup crew experiencing weird phenomena. In theory, I like that if I like the Ishimura more, but I like that's combat free. This game is doing a better job about having some downtime.
Yes.
You know, we walk along the tracks to engineering, and this is where the combat starts. A charger bursts out of a crate to attack
us
here. And the rest of it's going to have kind of peppered combat.
Yeah. We get to the gravity centrifuge, but it's offline. Bad news about the gravity centrifuge. So we have to go and find some pieces to seed into the machine, doing kind of like a pipe dream kind of deal, which is just searching in zero G3D space for the object.
Yep, for doodads.
Yeah.
To get this back up. On our way out of that room, we get a hallucination of being dragged by this big tentacle.
The thing that happens every 5 minutes in the original game.
Yes, exactly. You're having PTSD of Dead Space 1. Mm-hmm. We hop into the tram to the bridge, but end up at the medical desk because there's another mechanical problem. And like, I think that we have gotten called out before for calling this kind of shit out in video games. It happened a lot in Control as well. And like, the thing that we all hear, not called out, no one's being mean, but when people say they didn't have this experience, what they're saying is they just didn't notice it.
Yeah.
And sometimes it's worth noting, like sometimes I don't notice it either. Mm-hmm. Like there are games that where I'll play it. And when I'm playing it, going from kind of, there's a problem with the blank to the problem with the blank does not feel bad in the moment. I only notice it when we're going over it in notes. This is a game where I noticed it.
Yes.
The degree to which you are doing a task and get interrupted to do another task, which is then interrupted to do another task, is frankly kind of ridiculous in this game.
The main way that a story is enacted in a game, right? Like you can have all kinds of world building. You can have all kinds of, you know, great text that is beautiful and inspiring and, you know, it includes a bunch of stuff you have never seen. But it is enacted in a game and becomes a part of the game when it affects what you do, right?
Yes.
Like every video game story eventually becomes, what is the reason that I do the next thing that I have to do?
Yeah.
And when it hits the same note over and over again, and it becomes clear that they only kind of have one incredibly flimsy trick, it is impossible for that nerve not to feel inflamed when you see it.
What's frustrating about it too, or not frustrating, but a thing that's interesting about this is that in the first Dead Space, this is something that I got praised for a lot.
Yeah.
The idea that you were an engineer and you were constantly doing engineering stuff that just happened to have a survival horror game happening around you.
Mm-hmm.
That didn't spend really well with me, but if I put myself into a mindset of that spending with me, it wouldn't spend with me twice.
Yeah.
And the cool thing about parts of this game that don't engage with that is that they don't engage with that. Mm-hmm. Like, we're literally back in the Ishimura and we're surrounded by a part where we're doing Ishimura shit, which is, you know, there's a problem with the basement. I got bad news about the attic. We're doing Control stuff. In a lot of ways, this reminds me a lot of Control in a game that I felt like had bad encounter design that had really cool set pieces, but spent too much time shuttling me back and forth between uninspired things and not spending enough time in those set pieces.
Yeah.
Like, it's a different game in a lot of ways, but it has a lot of the same problems to me.
Yeah. And And just like, just do a find replace for like Doom 3 level design, right?
Yeah.
Where just like, oh, this door is locked. You need to get the yellow key. All right, I need to go get the yellow key. But to get the yellow key, you need to get the blue key. Like if you can do a find and replace on that, like you're just getting that kind of design with extra steps and the attempt to disguise it with like an in-game reason. That is not, that paint's not going to cover that surface area.
It's the same thing as the loading screen thing.
Yeah.
Like it's another thing of like when you can just make something effectively equal to something else. If the illusion breaks at all and you wireframe at all, it all falls down.
Mm-hmm.
You know? So yeah, this is a bummer part of the game to me. I'm not into this. There's one more big set piece that I like of this. Yeah.
But this is a highlight for people who really enjoy this game. It worked on me to a degree when I played it for the first time. I was like, whoa, I'm back.
Yeah. I can understand it.
Yes.
You know, I felt that in other video games. It's not a vitamin I'm immune to.
Yeah. So we have to pass through the medical wing, which I guess in order to find all the messes they need to clean up, they had to set it up with a black light, which I understand this is organic matter. It does look like huge cum shots blasted across the walls.
It is blasted. Well, it's one of the things that the necromorphs do. It's the big
job.
Point of, they do total paint jobs, and it's part of why the collectivism is like, why else are you going to become a unitologist?
Yeah. And you get cool stuff here, like, hey, you know, this like gunk on the walls, like we tested it. All of this DNA is human.
Yeah.
Which, yes, yes, yes. Hell yeah. Hell yeah. Hell yeah.
It's made of flesh. You know,
yeah.
It's all like protean human goop.
Yeah.
Yeah. And we get some specific combat encounters that are callbacks.
Yes.
The first game. You eventually get to the bridge. You activate the tethers and Tiedemann's freaking out. This is going to rip the moon apart. Nicole initially blocks you from getting into the escape pod, but you power through because she's fake. Mm-hmm. And you ride the pod to meet Ellie and Strauss, and we hear Strauss attack Ellie with a screwdriver.
Yes.
So us counseling her to leave him alone was not great.
No, we definitely did just force her to share a room with this incredibly dangerous person for a very long time.
Yes.
You crash and you get like a scene of Nicole's final message being projected over like kind of like a warped image of the marker.
Yeah.
And you wake up and you see Strauss jam a screwdriver into Ellie's eyeballs, and he's saying, "Cross my heart, hope to die, stick a needle in your eye."
Yeah. A real direct line, a real cheat code.
Yes.
To mirror neurons. So we're at the far end of the station. This starts chapter 11 in a mining facility, just being overtaken by this organic growth of the marker. Most of the enemies are the like hyper versions, the blackened versions.
Yes.
And they're spawning in all directions even more so.
Yes. You power up a door and Strauss runs up and like, you know, menaces you from the other side of a grate. He's holding up the screwdriver with Ellie's eyes still stuck on the end of it.
Yeah.
Like it's a kebab or an ice cream cone.
Yeah. It goes in a martini.
Yeah. And, you know, he's trying to like freak you out with it, but Ellie, you know, she's not dead. She just lost her eye. She sneaks up behind him and brains him. He's like, "You owe me an eye, you bastard."
Yeah. Good luck collecting.
Yeah.
However, before anything can happen, a tentacle rips us out into space.
Yeah.
We have to use these attachable thrusters to clear mining lasers to get back in. Mm-hmm. Do. And as we're trying to hack open this door, Strauss interrupts and tries attacking us with a screwdriver. He's got a thirst for eyes.
Mm-hmm.
In the struggle, Isaac impales his head and he dies. This is played up like it's going to be a boss fight as well. This is just QTEs.
Yeah.
And he takes the secret of the fourth step with him. We don't find out what that is yet.
Yes. We think, without him, it's going to be impossible to take apart the marker. Not the case.
Yes. Then we get what I consider to be, again, something that people really like about this game that I consider to be a really unearned thing. Mm-hmm. We did space our way through for a little bit, and then we open a door, and Nicole grabs us, ghost of girlfriend, pins us to the wall and says, "What do you think I am?" You know, and you go, "My guilt." You know, and he says, "No, like you are my everything, and if I let you go, I have nothing left." Mm-hmm. And this is him accepting.
Yeah.
Nicole then de-draculates, and because step four is acceptance. And now ghost girlfriend is now on our side.
Yeah.
I don't believe anything about Isaac as a person.
Yeah.
I don't believe anything about his journey towards acceptance. He has not done anything between this and the beginning of the game to show this character growth. All he's done is fix engineering problems in a video game.
Yeah. And every time Nicole shows up, he just waves her away.
He waves her away, fights her, or like yells at her. When did he have time to fucking learn this? Like, this is not a game with enough text for this characterization to have happened. It gets a lot of credit for having characterization at all, because the first one didn't. But, like, you know, you run into people talking about tearing up at this shit, or how this is a great evidence of, like, real character growth.
Yeah.
And, like, you, character growth is not a character flipping a switch to be better about a thing. Something has to happen. You know, you watch them do the work. Like, they have to, it happens organically. You see a series of things to change with them.
Yeah.
Isaac does not have enough internality and is not interfaced with people. We don't get enough of a view into his internality for me to buy this at all.
Yeah.
Like, I do not give a shit. This was frustrating to me because it was played like a moment of catharsis from which I had none.
It's also just Silent Hill 2. You know,
that is,
like,
true too.
You know, it's like, oh, is it your guilt because you encouraged her to go on this, right? You know, to go to the Ishimura, you know, where she, you know, where she died. And the problem is, A, you're doing it too early in the game. Like, what if you had James at Mary's bedside, you know, like right before Act 3? Not the way that that's, not the way that that works at all in this. You know, that is catharsis. And this is presented just as, well, you lost your handler, who was telling what to do. Now you need to get a different handler. Also, this is fucking stupid. Nicole has been the marker talking to him every time. He has realized this. Now suddenly he says the psychology plot words to have character development, and she appears different, but she's still having him do the same thing. And it's treated as a reveal that no, she was actually the marker the whole time. Like, this is, you know, putting on the clothing. It is putting on the costume of a psychological revelation. It's putting on the costume of catharsis while actually just being an excuse to have us, to have somebody give us a path to follow for the rest of it.
There's a perfectly interesting version of that, which is like this thing that we thought was bad cop decided that good cop would be more effective at us. This should not be played with Isaac coming to a revelation. If this were purely malevolent and the marker was doing it because what it was doing before wasn't working, like, we have marker being bad cop over and over, Isaac is pushing through it, but he's still doing everything it says.
Yeah.
Like, if he really defied it, you know, and then he doesn't have a revelation, the marker turns back and is like, you know, I tricks him maybe or something like that. It would be buyable. I just don't buy Isaac as an agent in this. He doesn't do enough to make him, you know. Yeah. So, like, there's something there. The idea that, like, you know, oh, you're going to keep doing the same thing. It's a video game. You're going to keep doing the same thing. The marker controls you. It's just going to use honey instead of vinegar.
Yeah.
There's something to that.
There is, but that's fan fiction. That's like writing that's writing in like a better motivation.
Yes.
You could say that's kind of like what the, you know, what this is, but that's just a version of what happened with Dana in the first act of this game.
Yeah.
You know, before she got, you know, put on the bus, before she was airlocked. It's still somebody lying to you to get what it wants.
It's a thing where we are writing the game for the game.
Yeah.
Like, you can interpret it as that if you want to, and you're feeling very kind about it, but I don't like the way it was sold. Yeah. If that was ever the intention, nobody can know intention doesn't matter. But if that was the intention, nothing about it, its articulation came through for me.
But it's like the transaction goes through. People interpret this as character growth and as a moment of, you know, genuine emotional epiphany, right?
Yeah.
It is accepted as such, but in reality, like, it's just a trick.
No,
like, whether or not Isaac actually has processed his feelings about his girlfriend has nothing to do with this.
And on top of the fact that I don't care whether he's done so, because she's not a person and he's not a person. They're not characters. I think their relationship isn't real. So this goes into chapter 12. We find Ellie trying to get this drilling vehicle started. Her rig health spine is blinking red. She's missing an eye.
Yeah.
And she's happy Strauss is dead. You know, Isaac says, you know, listen, Strauss can help because he was running away from his guilt. Unlike me, check out my cool guilt girlfriend.
I know stage four. It's acceptance. Yeah,
I know stage four. So, you know, we get the drill running. We do this really long combat section. We ride on top of it as we drill through this kind of rock monster tunnel thing, knocking these necromorphs loose. Again, this protean, all the flesh forming together.
Yes.
Eventually, we reach the base pillar of the government sector and we drill our way in.
Yeah. One of the few hard cuts in the game, actually, you get here. Yeah. You wake up and you see that there's a gunship docked here. There's a way to escape. We can get out of here. But Isaac is saying, like, no, there is a way for you to escape. Maybe there's room for you. Yeah. I'll be dot, dot, dot.
Yeah. Never mind.
Yeah. Isaac sends her away. It's like, yes. Hey, you know, like, this is your best chance of being rescued. I couldn't save Nicole, but I can save you. So bye, I guess. Yeah,
I'll save you, substitute girlfriend.
Yeah.
You know, Nicole appears and asks if we're ready to talk. You know, she begs, you know, make us whole this time, you know, for real, Isaac. Do the marker shit. And Isaac says that he can't. Tiemann radios in saying, listen, you're never going to get into, like, where I'm at. There are 200 armed soldiers guarding me. Yeah. And they get you at gunpoint. You sneak around them a little bit here.
You just walk to the right behind. Yeah, you walk behind a pillar to get into a room.
Gentlemen, like, I'm not going to turn my neck. To yank out this battery, the sector power is down, which allows the necromorphs to come in and kill them.
Yeah.
So the soldier plot is now gone. Tiemann says, you know, none of them can reach the marker.
Yeah. It's bad news if all of these bodies reach the marker because, you know, convergence, right?
Yeah. We run into Nicole and she says, like, she's going to guide us. She sticks out her hand and a golden line appears on the floor. Cool fucking around with the marker thing. It's not the marker, the guide line thing. I like this.
Yeah.
Fucking around with the interface in a way.
Yes. Yeah. But she's the one giving us our path from now on because she wants us to, you know, finish the marker. Mm-hmm. So this is just a long series of combat rooms, and then we get a boss fight against, kind of the varsity version of that, the Brute, right?
Yeah. I am beyond sick of the combat same way. By this point. I never want to do it again.
No.
Right in the elevator down, we finally see, the marker that we built, this gigantic, marker. There are a bunch of necromorphs gathered in the bottom.
Mm-hmm.
Nicole says the convergence is about to happen.
Yeah.
You know,
And Tiedemann radios saying, like, oh, you know, we never expected this many bodies. We can't have this many bodies. You know,
too many bodies, too much convergence happening.
Yeah. And it starts, like, this golden storm of energy appears around the marker.
Yeah. I go to the next room. We find a machine that activates the part of the brain where the marker codes are stored.
Yes.
We ask Tiedemann, like, why he's afraid of me using the machine. And Nicole says it's because we're working together. It's because he doesn't like our love. He's jealous of our freedom.
He just wants what we have, but he can never have it.
And we go through the steps. Step one, crawl inside the dark machine.
Mm-hmm.
Step
two, into this MRI machine that's here. Yeah.
Step two, the screws go tight all around.
Step three, holds your head still. Yeah.
Yep. Step three, cross your heart and hope to die. Stick a needle in your eye. And we had to put a laser needle into our eye, into our pupil.
This is all cutscene until, like, it holds still and you realize that you're controlling it.
Yeah.
This rules. Like, the eye shit works on me really well. Like, mirror neuron is hell, right? But you have to, like, you know, guide the needle in as Isaac is freaking out and you can see his vitals going up and, like, you're getting closer, you know, his eyes, really, he's trying to, like, look away, and then you just have to, like, recenter on him and then continue going in.
He doesn't have the calm sense of peace I would have.
Yeah, I know. I would just look straight ahead and get it over with.
Just rub out the fucking Band-Aid.
Yeah.
I am not as susceptible to eye stuff as you are. I like this. I don't like... It happens in the game by the time I'm really sick of it and want to be done.
That's the thing.
Like, I do think this is a cool scene. I've seen a lot of games where you have to do something to your eye now. Mm-hmm. This was an early one of them, of that.
Yeah, but you didn't get it. You got other ones, so you have the antibodies now.
Exactly. Yeah. Like, I played the BioShock DLC and stuff. Like, I'm also, it's not my mirror neuron thing. Like, I'm more of a degloving kind of Andrew. Like, that will activate me, and I'm like, I can't. Nope. Like, there's a movie called Nightbreed, where a guy peels off his skull.
Yeah.
Can't.
Yep.
Can't do it. That fucks me up. If video games start doing that, I'm out.
Seen in Dagon. Yeah.
Yep. Dagon fucks me up. Mm-hmm. Eye stuff, I'm kind of okay with it now.
Mm-hmm.
Like, now it seems like, I don't know why, but I'm like, you know, I don't know. I don't know. I feel like it doesn't, no longer, I just have the antibodies for it.
You know, I'm just like, oh, something bad happened to my eye. Oh, I've got another one. Okay, cool.
Yeah, I got a spare. I also feel like if you had to go in through your pupil, you could close your eye and just look straight ahead.
Mm.
And it would just go through the eyelid. You know?
That'd be bad. Yeah.
Well, I mean, it's not great, but you're already kind of in trouble. Like, I think it might, at that point, be in for a penny, in for a pound.
Yeah.
Make it easier to do. The terror is probably the worst part of this.
Yeah.
You know? Anyway, you do this. When this happens, everything gets all soft and golden, and Nicole says to follow the light to the marker.
Yeah.
Which gets us into chapter 14. This game should be fucking over by now.
It really, really should. Also, it's just repeating. It's repeating yes. beats now. Like, we're near the end, and just like in Dead Space 1, we need to go through a bunch of labs being chased by an enemy that we cannot kill.
Yeah, the Ubermorph. It's like the Ultramorph. Mm-hmm. It's regenerating. It's invincible. It chases us. Not a great chase sequence.
No.
Then we get through this chapter 15, the final chapter. We get to the floor of the marker chamber. And we have a really big combat rush to reach the center. Once we reach the center, we find this text log from Tiedemann to his staff, responding to accusations that he brought about Titan Station's ruin by bringing the marker and how he's being manipulated. He cites the economic boom he caused. Again, this is where it kind of starts talking about what the marker can actually do. Mm-hmm. Really late and too little. I feel like Tiedemann should have been making a good argument. This would be a better game if Tiedemann is making a convincing argument this entire time.
Yeah, as opposed to him being very right, I need to kill you, I need to stop you from getting here, and being...
But making no argument. Mm-hmm. Like, you know, like, it is always... When the bad guy actually has a point, it's always a better story.
Yeah. So we approach the base of the marker, and there's kind of this, you know, beacon of light kind of washing everything out. And from that beacon of light comes a javelin. It pierces you. If you don't yank this out, you get a hilarious death scene of you just being pincushioned.
Like, oh, Diamond's, I didn't
Diamond's
do that.
Like, oh, I didn't expect this to work. I was taking a note, so I didn't do that's the button great. Mash. I just got pincushioned by, and Diamond's like, oh, this rules.
That's great.
Yeah.
Everything's kind of Tiedemann.
Yeah. He's there. He's kind of like two-facified. Like, something has exploded and like half of his body is like skinless, but he's still trying to stop you. He's being backlit by Nicole, who's kind of like standing behind him.
We hang out with the javelin that he shot us with. And he says, the research on the marker was worth every life lost on the station.
Yeah.
Here, you know, that's an obvious villain thing to say. We get a hold of his gun and kill him with it.
Yeah.
Nicole likes this. She gives you a hug, says, thank you, Isaac. Now time to die. And she shoots you with light from her eyes and mouth. She's still evil.
Yeah.
She's still a hallucination like, brought by her marker sickness.
Yeah. You forgot about that? It's been like an hour, Isaac. You forgot that she's a marker hallucination?
He did. Yeah. Isaac's not smart.
No.
And then we get our boss fight here. This sucks. The stars from the sky. We're in a mind realm with Nicole. She says that yours is the last body they need, since you're one of the makers. They need these keystone bodies. We had a boss fight where we fight a ghost apparition while swarms of monster kids come at us.
Mm-hmm.
As she kind of floats around this platform. And then if we do enough damage to her, the marker reveals its weak spot.
Yes.
We do damage to that. It's better than the end boss of the first Dead Space, which I fucking hated.
Mm-hmm.
But this is still, I feel like this is fairly uninspired.
Yeah. Going into a realm and fighting the presence of the marker inside of your head, it's not for me.
The symbolic representation of your girlfriend guilt.
Yeah.
That you had already dealt with, but it's back, baby. Guilt's back, baby. Guilt too. After we do this enough, Isaac wakes up. We win. You're in the real world. The marker's no longer storming. The station is coming apart, however.
Yes.
And you sit down sad, like you're going to sacrifice yourself. Sad, and the credits roll. I like this trick.
Mm-hmm.
Looks like it's just going to be a downer ending.
Yeah. But your little communicator comes on, and like the credits go away as they're rolling, which makes it feel like, because everything is diegetic, like Isaac was just seeing this.
Looking at
like,
it,
yeah, this is what happens when you die while you wear a rig.
If you're wearing a rig and you see credits before you die, that's pretty good. That's a pretty good joke. This is a neat trick, a little bit undermined by the fact that we just did Hitman Blood Money.
Oh, yeah.
In the fall, that has the amazing version of this.
Mm-hmm. That did it 7 years before this.
Yeah. And is like so fucking cool. Uh-huh. Had gameplay after it, like this kind of victory lap. Ellie calls and says, you're a bastard. Like, what was your great plan? Just dump me off and die? She's going to blast open the roof and rescue us.
Yes.
So we fly Isaac to her ship as the gravity fails and she yanks us in. And the ending, this is also cute. The ending is shot just like the ending of the first game. Isaac's in the pilot chair looking resolved. He looks over at the other chair and you think it's going to be Dracula and Nicole. But it's Ellie and she goes, what? That's kind of cute.
Yes. And you're going to be boyfriend and girlfriend until you break up before Dead Space 3 happens. And Dead Space 3 is you trying to go and rescue her.
Yes. The post-credits letting us know there's a sequel. EarthGov officials talk about there are 11 known marker sites.
Yes.
And they want that clean energy.
Yeah. the sci-fi motivation that like that applies to everything. Oh no, yes. There's an energy source that we could use. It's infinite, but there's a downside.
Sci-fi people fucking love clean energy. Oof. At least Doom had the good grace to make it be literally hell energy.
Yeah, yeah.
There's moments in this where I'm very negative during this episode. There are moments in this where I had fun.
Mm-hmm.
There are parts where the combat is pretty fun. It's not horrible. I love the main gun. I love your dismembering gun, your mm-hmm. space ripper, your engineering sniper. Yeah. I think that's really fun. There are parts where it's fun. It's just too much of everything, even the stuff I liked.
Yeah.
And there's a real dearth of cool set piece shit.
Yeah.
After the kind of the first half of it, like I want to be in cool spaces.
That's the thing. There is too much of everything. But like, I wish that more of it was like the stuff that I liked.
Yeah.
I want more of the stuff that I like.
It's very front-loaded with the stuff I like.
Yeah.
And the stuff I like is just, it's done better other places too. There's like something about this that just leaves me cold. I don't care about this man. Mm-hmm. I don't like the actual idea of the marker, there being this ancient alien artifact that is compiling corpses to make evil super moons.
Mm-hmm.
Like that's fine. But yeah. I've just seen it done better and earlier.
Yeah.
Like on paper, that seems like something I would like, and it could live and breathe based on the details. If I liked my main character who was dealing with it, if I liked the monster designs more, like there's a way that if I liked the combat more, there's a version of all of these elements that could work better for me. And this one just isn't it for me.
Yeah. Like no individual element is strong enough for this to lean on itself and make a dependable stool.
Yes. Right,
like I wouldn't rest my body weight on this. Like none of the legs are very good, you know.
It's like it's hard for me to say it's not a stool. It's just not a very comfortable stool.
Yeah,
you know, like it'll make a turd. Like you can play this and it'll take hours in front of you and put them behind you.
No, I think that for me, like a lot of my negativity, like off of this, you know, is coming to it after having liked it and realizing that. You know, my tastes, you know, have changed but because I've played other stuff in the meantime and I've played stuff before this that does the stuff that this does better. It's impossible to remove that context from it. You know, you still try to meet the game on its terms, but we are playing it and talking about it in 2026.
Yeah.
I'm coming at this kind of with a little bit of, sadness or bitterness and saying like, oh yeah, no, this actually does like fix a lot of the problems with Dead Space 1, but it is still Dead Space.
Yeah.
And like it is making improvements to a house that I just kind of don't like living in very much.
That's what it did. And by making those improvements, it showed me things that were going on with the house that I didn't realize. You know, when I talked about kind of the beginning of this episode, like trying to figure out why this thing that is ostensibly very Gary coded is something that just fell flat on me. When I did we covered the first one, I thought it was because of these anonymous spaces. I thought it was exclusively because of this breathless pace. This game helps those things and I still didn't work. So it left me to look for other things.
Mm-hmm.
You know, the easy answers as to why this didn't work weren't necessarily the correct ones for me.
Yeah.
It's many authors. Like there are mm-hmm. many things I don't like about it.
Yeah.
Just not for me. And like, I would be happy to be an outlier in this. I understand this is a popular and well-loved game franchise.
Yeah.
I didn't play a lot of games around this time. So there's like mm-hmm. a whole era of this stuff that I just don't have nostalgia for.
Yeah.
You know, and it's called Xbox 360 in that generation. Like that was a Rock Band machine to me mostly.
Yeah.
So,
yeah. Well, I mean, as somebody who was very engaged in that generation, especially like kind of the latter part of it, you know, like coming back to it and seeing, you know, seeing that, boy, that house wasn't as nice as you remember it in your head from when you lived there. Right.
Mm-hmm.
I can speak to that, speak to that perspective. It is a bummer. And I think that, you know, a lot of this would work for me if I was not incredibly frustrated every moment that I poked at this again with the staggering, with the encounter design, with stuff coming, you know, out of every direction and interrupting me. And also just the lack of tactics at all in the combat. Like there's a lot of ways that this comes up short that we hit in the generalities, but I want to circle back to, especially after talking about the specific things that are good and do work, as we, you know, kind of hit it, you know, beat by beat, remember that the foundation here is still that stuff.
Yeah. Right. You know, and it's not to cop out and do like for fans of that stuff. I just know there are people for which that stuff really works for. Mm-hmm. And trying to figure out what that is, you know.
Yeah.
Like, what is the thing that, about them? What is the thing they like? And I think it is just, it is being constantly interrupted by attacks from all angles.
Yeah.
Like, that is a gaming vitamin to some folk. Mm-hmm. Like, some people get bored when they're not being attacked from all angles. Like, there are people who have described, like, Resident Evil 4's combat pace as boring to me.
Yeah.
You know? Same thing with people who, like, oh, like, Dark Souls or Demon Souls is boring now. Mm-hmm. Because things aren't coming at me from all angles. There's, like, an arms race towards speed and kineticism that I get frustrated with in video games.
There's an arms race towards removing all context from the action until it is just responding to things that happen on screen.
Eventually, it will all become cup and ball. Like, we have to get everything down to a cup and ball. Yeah. Or a reflex test where you're holding a ruler and seeing how quickly you can grab it after you drop it. Mm-hmm. If video games are that with a bunch of different map markers and skill trees, then that's what we want.
And while somebody's yelling at you the whole time.
Exactly.
Yeah.
I don't know. Yeah. Didn't feel anything for it. You know, feel a little bit self-conscious about it. Cause like, I also didn't feel too much about Halo Wars, even though I like it better than this. Mm-hmm. Next episode is going to be a weird one. That's going to be our episode on We Love Katamari, which is going to be me and my wife. Mm-hmm. I put my wife to work for the good of the network. I gave her homework. I said, hey, you want to play? And she's like, yeah, I want to play We Love Katamari. So I've been watching her play We Love Katamari. It's going to be a Gary guest episode, which means less of the play-by-play makes sense for Katamari. Mm-hmm. Like talking about like in this one, you have to get this big with this much time.
Yeah.
Wouldn't make a lot of sense. We're going to talk about the gimmick levels, like what it's like to play that game. And I think hopefully the way they'll be interesting is that my wife is... you know, plays video games, but is a different kind of gamer than we are as a thing. And the fresh perspective on that kind of thing.
And this, you know, wouldn't be meaningful coming from Gary because he liked her because he married her. Lives great.
Yeah. Oh, so, I mean, she's great. Yeah. I finally figured it out.
Yeah.
It took me a long time in my life, but I figured out how to pick them.
Yeah. You're going to love her. Yeah.
So I think you'll like it. If that's not for you, if you like our regular episodes, some people didn't like the Isaac episode either. Mm-hmm. That's okay. We do these episodes from time to time as part of our change in this. It is okay. You're allowed. Yeah. But they're going to happen so we can get some breaks. Kate has moved across country and wants to get her head above water. And it is one of the hardest things you can do, moving across country. And we have a bunch of long games, in the pipeline, So, mm-hmm.
And I have guest stuff coming up as well that I think people are going to enjoy. So
whenever I want to, I can just take a couple weeks off and just guppy, baby. The other game we're doing is Resident Evil Requiem that month. Mm-hmm. So if you have things to say about that, that's going to be April 15th, duckfeed.tv/contact. You can also reach out to me specifically if you have a project or product, if you're any kind of marginalized person and you're a project or product you'd like us to shout out, send me an email, gary@duckfeedtv. We'd be happy to do it. Haven't gotten one for a little bit. Be happy to do that though, if you'd, if you'd like to. If you have any things to say about Maze games, which are The Last Spell, RimWorld, and Rage, reach out by the 15th of May at duckfeed.tv/contact.
Yes. Specific and concise responses are preferred.
I'll tell you one thing. We're not going to beat The Last Spell or RimWorld. RimWorld is an infinite hours game, and The Last Spell is very long. I'm knee-deep in The Last Spell right now. I like it a lot. It is hard and long.
Yeah.
So those are both patron requests, and the patrons have both been also briefed. That we're not going to go, I'm going to go back in time and put 400 hours into RimWorld real quick.
Yeah.
That's not what they're sponsoring. So again, setting the expectation, if you're a huge RimWorld head, there probably are podcasts where people get really deep into it. If you're a RimWorld curious, we're going to have like a 100-hour and a 20-hour perspective to present to you.
Yes.
As kind of a beginner perspective.
Yep. If you want to get the Rage episode or the Resident Evil Requiem episode, go to patreon.com/duckfeedtv. You get the full versions of those, plus all of the premium episodes we have done in the past.
Mm-hmm. You can also leave us a rating review on Apple Podcasts, Podcast Addict. You can talk about us on message boards. We have Reddit now. I want to throw something out there. Cinder Elf, a super listener, has been posting animations that they've made at our suffering bits, and they're really funny. Yeah. So there aren't a lot of good reasons to go on Reddit, but this is one of them. Mm-hmm. They're really funny and funny. Like, really fun and funny. High recommendation.
Yes.
So if you're on our Patreon, you can join our Discord. talk mm-hmm. there. There's lots of ways to join the community and help out in addition to patronizing, even though that is the most direct way.
It is.
Kind of mandatory is thanking our producer, Gwen.
Thank you,
Gwen. That cost you nothing. We won't even know if you don't actually do it.
Mm-hmm.
Like, really.
Oh, speak for yourself.
You're going to know? Because I was going to say there's nothing that they lose in just saying they're going to do it.
Oh, yeah. No.
But maybe.
Let's go with yours. I like yours better. I don't know. So do it. It's like Pascal's wager kind of thing.
It's a Schrodinger's wager kind of thing, because I won't know, mm-hmm. you know, so you may as well do it. But Kay will know, so you better do it.
Yeah. Yeah.
It's a good podcaster, bad podcaster kind of thing. It's a real Bob Mackie, Jesse Thorne setup.
Oh, good Lord.
Just be mean to Jesse Thorne, not Bob Mackie.
I know.
It's a guppy bit. Okay. Anyway, what should they watch out for until next week?
Watch out for Ghost Girlfriend.